Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out of a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. Huh. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I bring you precious contraband and ancient tales from.
All right, all right, all right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, and we're here until 5 a.m. I'm here every weekday morning. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. And, yeah, it's Thursday. That means Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, baby, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. We'll play them later. After the 2 o'clock news, we'll start off. And it's one artist, three songs. Get your requests in now. 312-981-7200 for Triple Play Thursday. One artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. Okay, coming up in just a few minutes, our good friend Michael Osaki is going to join us from baseballintheattic.com. If you have any sports memorabilia, sports cards or memorabilia, any of that stuff, like maybe in a box or in your closet somewhere, and you're wondering how much it's worth, he can give you an appraisal. Michael is a professional appraiser in the world of sports memorabilia. And, we always have him on usually at the beginning of the baseball season and then at the end of the baseball season. Baseball season just started. And so we thought, all right, let's get Michael in here, and we'll talk about sports memorabilia and what's happening at his website, baseballintheattic.com. And then, of course, if you want to call in, and we'll open up the phone lines in just a few minutes, at 312-981-7200, you can text us or call us with a description of your the sports memorabilia, and Michael will let you know how much it's worth, and we'll give you all the details on that. It's always fun to have Michael in. And again, 312-981-7200 for talk and text with any and all of your sports memorabilia questions. If you're wondering what something's worth, we can give you an appraisal over the air. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And speaking of collections, we are going to talk about some of the most expensive sports memorabilia items of all time. And then people who have just, like, weird collections. Just weird stuff. People who collect a lot of weird stuff. And I think you might be surprised at just how weird some of these collections are. So we'll have that. Weird collectibles we'll be talking about as well. And then we'll tell you about some things that you're doing wrong. There are things that we do that we do in life that we're actually doing wrong, and we'll tell you how to do those things right. So that's all coming up on the show. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk, text, any of your sports memorabilia questions that you have, and of course your Triple Play Thursday requests. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected, though, is on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. And you can follow us, follow us on Twitter, and also download our podcast. Subscribe to our podcast. Every single second of every single show is downloaded in podcast form, and you can subscribe. It's free. If you can't listen live between 1 and 5 a.m., you can download the podcast. They'll automatically be sent to your device, and you can listen at your leisure, bro. So that's how you can do it right there. Well, let me say hello to my producer, Tom Hush. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing great, Nick.
Good. Are you a sports memorabilia collector? Do you have anything at home?
Not really. I like jerseys. I really like to get a lot of jerseys, but nothing signed.
Yeah.
Nothing of really great value, but I love seeing stories about these, you know, things that are signed by, like, Babe Ruth or whoever.
Well, Michael's loaded with a bunch of stories like that, and he's also, you know, a professional appraiser, and we always get a lot of phone calls and texts from people who have stuff lying around in their attic or in their basement or in a closet somewhere, and Michael can help them figure out how much they're worth, if it's worth anything at all. So that's what he does. Baseballintheattic.com is his website, by the way. And Michael will be in here in just a few minutes. Let me say hello to Vic Vaughn, who's in the newsroom. Hi, Vic.
Good morning, sir.
How are you?
Doing very well.
Oh, good, man.
Yeah, I've got some sports memorabilia.
Do you?
I've been interested to throw a couple at him and see what he says.
Yeah,
but
please
I'm always
do.
In here writing. I never have, you know, time. But, yeah, I've got probably, I don't know, 20 or so Bears things, you know, 8x10 glossies signed by Bears players, ex-players,
yeah.
Former players. Some of them, you know, Hall of Famers now. So
well, you know, just
I'd be interested.
If you get some free time in the newsroom when you're not writing the news,
yeah.
If you want to jump in, please do.
Cool.
Anytime. Hey, how about them Cubs?
Yeah.
Oh,
how about them
God.
Cubs?
I don't even know what to say. I mean,
people are pulling their hair out.
I mean, you know, I could have pitched better in relief.
I'd like to see it.
I don't understand what I mean. There's no bullpen. I mean, and Lester pitched a really good game. He gave up two dingers, you know, but outside of that, he pitched a really solid game and he got no decision because the bullpen blew it again. That eighth inning was ridiculous. Three walks in a row with nobody up, bases loaded, nobody out. What are we talking about here? My God. This might be a long season. I don't know. I know it's only April 4th right now. And last night was only the fourth game of the season. But my God, man. I mean, what are we talking about here?
The club put a lot of pressure on themselves, too, because of the way last season ended up.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't happy with that decision. I mean, with that result, obviously.
Absolutely.
And so all the emphasis that was put on the beginning of this season to get a good start.
Exactly.
You know, so.
Exactly. It was like, you know, they lost that wild card game. They lost two games in a row at the end of the season, including the wild card game. And then they're like, okay, we're going to get off to a great start. Nah, blah, 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 blah. They're 1-3. And the bullpen has blown it three times now. Anyway, it's frustrating. Hey, the Hawks won. It doesn't mean anything, but they won. We'll have the Blackhawks Express. We'll play that a little bit later on. So I need to play something here. This is seriously a massive highlight of my career, and I'm not being facetious when I say that. Tonight after the game, the Hawks won right here on WGN. Chris Bowden interviewed the great Doc Emmerich, perhaps the greatest voice in hockey history. The best play-by-play national hockey announcer on the planet. You hear him on NBC, you hear him on NBC channel, and then you hear him, you see him and hear him. He does all of the playoff games and the Stanley Cup final. He's usually up there with Eddie Olchek doing those. Doc Emmerich, he is the preeminent voice in hockey. No question about it. And I am a massive fan. I think he's one of the greatest sportscasters of all time. Definitely the best voice and national voice in hockey. Pat Foley's the best locally. But, you know, and John and Troy, fantastic. But Doc Emmerich is on a whole nother, he's on a whole nother level, this guy. I mean, he is a legend. He is an absolute legend. If you're a hockey fan, you know who he is. I don't know anybody who doesn't love and respect Doc Emmerich and think he is absolutely amazing. So, as I said, after the game, the post-game show last night, right here on WGN, Chris Bowden, who hosts pre- and post- and intermission reports right here, does a great job here at WGN. Well, he interviewed Doc Emmerich after the game. Again, the legendary Doc Emmerich. He's interviewing me. He's closing out the interview at this point. So Chris Bowden is closing out the interview at this point. Now I want you to know, I've never met Doc Emmerich. I've never interviewed Doc Emmerich. I've Cochran has interviewed him several times, and you know he's been on the station many, many times because he's Doc Emmerich, and we are the home of the Chicago Blackhawks. But I've never personally met him. I've never been in contact with him except as a very, 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 very big fan who has massive amounts of respect for the guy. Let's play the audio and then we can talk a little bit about it afterwards. This happened on the air last night after the hockey game with Chris Bowden interviewing the great Doc Emmerich.
Well, enjoy the ride without us again, unfortunately, this year, and always great visiting with you. Have fun.
Thank you. 50,000 watts, and that means I can get you day and night, and of course with the stream all the time. and from early in the morning until sometimes in the middle of the night. How does Nick come up with things to say at 2 o'clock in the morning? It's mystifying to me, but I love listening to all of you, and I thank you so much.
I can't stand it. My head is exploding right now.
You two are on first-name basis, I see.
Can't...
Nick.
Listen, I can't believe that. I mean, this is seriously... This is massive to me. This is like
I could see how,
like a
man.
Big
That's
deal. Now I'm nervous because he might be listening right now. And I'm like, wait a minute, Doc Emmerich might be listening to the show right now? I don't even know what to say, man. When I got here, our good buddy Vince Maranto, who is a great stand-up comedian, a friend to the radio station, been on my show, been on Patty's show many times, a regular host and comedian at Zany's. And a great guy. He'd been listening to my show for many, many years. Been listening to the station for many years. He posted on my Facebook page about 15 minutes after I got here. He said, "Hey, did you know that you were name dropped by Doc Emmerich today?" And I went, "What?" So I called him immediately, and he's like, "Yeah, man." And then I told Tom. Tom, you found the audio. Why don't we just play that one more time, just so I can hear Doc Emmerich?
Enjoy the ride without us again, unfortunately, this year. And always great visiting with you. Have fun.
Thank you. 50,000 watts, and that means I can get you day and night, and of course with the stream all of the time, and from early in the morning until sometimes in the middle of the night. How does Nick come up with things to say at 2 o'clock in the morning? It's mystifying to me, but I love listening to all of you, and I thank you.
I can't believe this. I'm sorry, but this, if I'm, gushing a little bit too much, it's because people, that's Doc Emmerich talking about me. And again, I've never met him. I've never, had him on the show. I had no idea he listened.
It's just like getting name dropped by God.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Now don't get nervous tonight, now that you know that.
Doc, the lines are open. Give us a call. Give us a call, man.
Just act like we've been here before.
I got to regain my composure here. But when I first heard about this, I couldn't believe it. And then when I first heard the audio, you were sitting right next to me when I heard it. Unbelievable. So that's a highlight for me, and I'm not exaggerating, like a really big highlight for my career, being name-dropped by Doc Emmerich. So that was a great way to start work. I got here 15 minutes in, and I'm listening to Doc Emmerich mention me, and I'm like, oh, this might be a good show this morning. I might enjoy myself this morning. And Tom, we will play that probably a couple more times during the show.
Oh yeah, I'm ready.
When people start waking up, I want to make sure, like maybe around 4:30, we just drop that in again, just casually for the people who are getting up early to come into work. So anyway, thank you, Doc Emmerich. I just don't even know what to say. You're one of my heroes, and to know that you actually listen to the show is pretty astonishing and really amazing and humbling. So anyway, that was cool as hell. Sorry. That's how I just wanted to start the show off with that immediately. All right. Okay. And Vic, anytime you want to jump in a little bit later, if you're, I know you got a couple of newscasts to write, but if you're wondering what some of your stuff is worth, Michael will help you out. Okay.
Awesome.
All right. Anybody else out there, if you've got sports memorabilia and you're wondering how much it's worth or if it's worth anything at all, Michael Osaki from baseballintheattic.com will join us. He's in the PPG Paints green room right now. And Tom's going to grab him from the PPG Paints green room. And when we come back, Michael Osaki will be here. We're going to talk about sports memorabilia news and then answer any and all of your questions for appraisal at 312-981-7200 for talk and text. This week on Chicago's Best, love is in the air. From romantic dinners to competitive games, the CB team is scoping out Chicago's Best date night spots Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How's everybody doing? Good morning. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We are here until 5 a.m., and we're going to be talking a little bit later on about weird collections, people that collect weird stuff. And I mean really, really, really weird stuff. We're also going to talk about the most expensive sports memorabilia a little bit later on and things that we're all doing wrong. And we'll get more details on that. But fresh from the PPG Paints green room, we're going to welcome Michael Osaki. Baseballintheattic.com is the website. And if you guys are looking for an appraisal or wondering what something might be worth, if you have some sports memorabilia lying around the house in the closet in a box somewhere, and you're wondering how much it's worth, 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text, and Michael will be happy to help you out. 312-981-7200. Let's welcome Michael back to the show. Michael, how are you?
Nick, it's great to be here. Yeah. I want to thank you for having me back, and I just realized that this is my 10th year anniversary of coming on your show.
Is that right?
And because of that, I wanted to thank you for buying me pizza. I've been coming here for 10 years in the green room. I was shoving my face with pizza.
Uh-huh.
So thank you very much.
No, you should thank Patty Vasquez for that, because that was for her show.
Oh, so I thought it was for me, Nick.
Oh, yeah, you know what? It was. That's right. It was. But anyway, so, well, thanks for coming up. We always appreciate it. And it's the beginning of baseball season. We always love to have you on. Tell everybody the story about how, you know, you got a shoebox full of cards from your grandfather, correct?
Yeah, back in 1997,
mm-hmm.
for my birthday, my grandfather got me a shoebox full of old cards. They were from the 1950s, 1960s. It got me on the hunt of trying to find more of them, but also better understand the values of the cards.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm looking at two of the same cards, why is one card worth $10 and one card worth $100? And so
yeah.
That's how it started.
And now, how long has baseballintheattic.com been around?
2007.
That was your first. That was the first of 12 years you've been doing it.
That was the first iteration, 2007.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Very, very cool. Well, and it's not just baseball cards. Now, you are an official appraiser. What does one have to do in order to be that?
Correct. So I'm a certified appraiser through ISA, International Society of Appraisers, and they are the governing organization for not just sports appraisers like myself, but art and jewelry and glass and toys and automobiles, and the list goes on and on and on. So it's not just rigorous testing, but you have to be a thought leader in the field. You have to, you know, be on TV, radio, have a certain amount of publishings. Additionally, there's a certain amount of coursework you have to do every year, a certain amount of appraisals every year.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of different checklisted items that have to be done on a yearly basis.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And now this work, actually, you know, you travel quite a bit, too, you know, appraising, like, estates and things like that. What are some of the more recent places that you've been?
Yeah. So a couple months ago, I was in Florida, and I was in the Tampa area, Tampa, Clearwater. And I was realizing, I was like, wow, I get to Tampa about three times a year. I didn't realize that because I travel a lot. I'm here, I'm there, I'm everywhere. In a couple weeks, I'll be in Los Angeles and Palm Springs, California. And this really, April is the kickoff of my busy season, not just because of baseball, but as the weather starts to change across the country, people start to uncover and unearth.
Oh, spring cleaning.
Exactly.
Yeah,
spring cleaning.
Yeah,
and, you know, maybe Grandpa Joe passed away around Christmas, and now, okay, let's go through his belongings as the weather gets nicer. So they'll find things and call me and say, Michael, we have this big box from Uncle Joe or Grandpa Joe. You know, he passed away. Is it worth anything?
Yeah. And so then you travel around and check that out. You also speak a lot, too?
Speak a lot, too, for different organizations. And then for a long time, I've been writing for Parade Magazine as well.
Right. And you got a couple of stories coming up for Parade Magazine. We'll talk about those in a little bit. Again, our phone lines are open right now, and our text lines are open. Talk or text. If you've got some sports memorabilia and you're wondering, you know, what it could be worth, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for any and all sports memorabilia.
Doc Emmerich, please call.
Yeah, Doc Emmerich, please call. And again, let's explain to people that it is, you know, describing something on the radio here is you know, you're going to give them kind of a cursory appraisal because it's best to actually see the item itself. So if they're really interested, even more detail, maybe take a picture of it and describe it and send it to you.
Absolutely. Pictures are worth 1,000 words. Sure, if somebody has a Michael Jordan signed photo, I can give them a range. But in order to get to a precise, really, dollar, I need to see the condition of the photo, the strength of the pen or Sharpie that was used.
Mm-hmm.
I need to see if it was inscribed to somebody. And so, yes, pictures are always better. But please do call tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And we always, you know, we get a bunch of people, because I know a lot of people have that. You know, like boxes of stuff that they just haven't probably looked at in a really long time. And if you want to get some questions answered and wonder how much something is worth, Again, our phone lines are open. Our text lines are open. You can text or call us at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for that. We've got a few stories here that I want to get your thoughts on. Former Kansas City Royals owner donated a bunch of sports memorabilia to the Florida Atlantic University. Some really cool stuff. Yeah. Babe Ruth's pinstripe uniform pants worn on his first day as a New York Yankee in 1921. That's got to be worth a lot of money.
Yeah, we're talking serious, serious money.
Yeah, big time. Like Joe DiMaggio's 1936 rookie uniform?
Yeah.
Man.
We're talking about millions of dollars here.
No question about it. I mean, that's really... Is there something that is the most expensive item out there?
So there's... Yes, and I'll kind of segment it by item. So, for example, with the jersey... one of the earliest known Babe Ruth jersey, game-worn jersey, sold for $4.4 million several years ago.
Amazing.
Now, that is, to this day, the most expensive sports item to ever sell. However, the most expensive baseball card to sell was last February, a Mickey Mantle rookie card in mint condition sold for $2.88 million.
Wow.
Now, there are a couple that are in better condition. There are a couple in gem mint condition in private collections. There's three of them in the entire world. I don't think those will sell in the next 20 years, but if they did, they would sell for probably about $10 million each.
Wow, that's amazing. That's amazing.
Because there is a certain multiple that needs to be applied. So we know if a mint sold for close to $3 million, like I said, 2.88, there's a multiple you have to add on for a 10,
yeah,
which is gem mint. So about $10 million, I would say, is fair auction value. And insurance value would be about $15 million.
Wow. Man, that's something. What a business. All right, hang on, Michael, okay? Sure. All right, Michael Osaki is with us. We have to break for the news. Baseballintheattic.com is the website. But he's here live to help you and appraise your stuff. So either text us or call us and describe some of the sports memorabilia you have, and we'll be able to help you out. 312-981-7200. The news is up next. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m., and we're about to jump back into talking about sports memorabilia and collections and stuff like that. Michael Osaki from baseballintheattic.com is with us, and again, our phone lines are open, our text lines are open. If you have some sports memorabilia and you're wondering what it could be worth, call or text us at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Later on, we are going to talk about people who do have collectible stuff, but that weird, just weird stuff, and more. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. Let's welcome Michael back to the show. Welcome back, Michael.
Hey, Nick.
All right. Vic, you care to throw a couple of items at Michael? Vic said he had a few things.
I heard Michael say it's best if he gets a photo, so I don't know if this is going to help. I'll try to describe it. One of them, the one I'm kind of wondering about the most, is a Mitch Trubisky one, because he's kind of, you know, newer. This one I have is Mitch Trubisky. It's his draft pick photo, so he's in a suit. It was on draft day, and he's holding up a Bears jersey with a number one on it, and he's got a Bears hat and a big smile. I'm wondering what that one's worth.
Vic, is that photo signed or unsigned?
Signed. It's autographed by Mitch Trubisky.
Okay, a couple hundred bucks.
Couple hundred, wow, cool. Oh. I was wondering mainly because I bought it for around, I think, less than 70. I think it was like mid-60s. But he had a decent, you know, rookie year, and the second year was much better, I thought. And so, yeah, I was wondering.
Yeah.
Other than that, I mean, I've got about 20, but some of the top ones I think are my favorites. I've got two by Gale Sayers. One is, like, looks really old as far as the photograph. It's black and white. It's from the... back in the day, I would say, you know, it's autographed, and then another one is later. It's actually in a game. It was taken in a game, and both of them were autographed by Gale. I don't know how else I could describe those.
So, first off, unfortunately, Gale Sayers isn't really doing that well as far as health wise. But a signed photo of his, anywhere from $40 to $50 for an 8x10, a 16x20 photo would be a little bit more, maybe about $60 to $70.
Okay, and then Dan Hampton, great damn Dan Hampton, WG and Zone Dan Hampton.
Yeah.
I see him on TV all the time. $9 to $10.
Yeah.
And
we could get Hamp's autograph anytime we want here.
Yeah. Right. Mike Singletary, Brian Urlacher, those two are two of my favorites.
Singletary, probably even less than Dan Hampton. But Brian Urlacher, God, back in the day, an Urlacher, that was, gosh, $250. But now it's about half of that.
Mm. Yeah.
Some of these, though, as we've talked about, Michael, the some of the price ranges is because some of these guys don't sign a lot of stuff. But absolutely, some guys sign everything. And that's why, you know, if the signatures are on a ton of things, that makes it a little bit less, you know, worth less.
I have kind of a funny one to throw at him.
Okay.
If Dan Hampton's only worth $10, how much would a pristine Cade McNown? I have one. I don't know why I bought it, but I got it.
Okay. So $10, meaning you would have to pay me $10 to take that off of your hands.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right. That's, well, that helps you out a little bit, right, Vic?
Win some, you lose some.
All right, there you go, man. All right, very cool.
Thanks, Vic.
630 area code says, I have a poster signed by Michael Jordan and a basketball signed by Scottie Pippen. They were both from the early 90s when Jordan used to hold a basketball camp at Elmhurst College. Neither one is authenticated, but they were signed when they stopped in at a Ray Graham event for fundraising for people with disabilities. How much would that be worth? So a poster signed by Jordan, a basketball signed by Pippen.
Okay, the basketball signed by Pippen, about $75. A photo signed by Jordan, $200 or $250, depending upon the photo and the strength of the signature.
Got it. All right, we got some people on the line. Here is Linda on WGN. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I have a collage of five photos and a signature that says Walter Payton Sweetness, and I actually have a silver label on it, so I don't know, I think that means it's certified. And it says Walter Payton Sweetness, HOF 73193, League MVP 1977, career yards 16,726, career touchdowns 110. How much would that be worth? It's in pristine condition.
Okay, it sounds like it is framed, and I'm guessing, because I've seen a lot of these COAs over time, COA, Certificate of Authenticity, that probably came from his company, actually. Back in 1994, I met Walter, and he was the first professional athlete that I ever met. And there was a picture of me and him on my website, baseballandtheact.com, and he was the nicest still to this day. I always remember the conversations that I had with him back at his corporate office in Schaumburg. But back to the caller, I would definitely email me a picture of what you have. Signed Walter Payton, anything is, you know, valuable. You know, it could be this collage, a jersey, a football, but without even seeing it, I'm going to say at least $250.
At least 250, but also if you want to take a picture, where do people email the stuff to you?
They could email me, michael@baseballintheattic.com, or you can find me on Facebook and send me a photo, or on Twitter.
On Facebook. So it's Facebook, facebook.com/baseballattic. On Facebook, but also you can send michael@baseballintheattic.com. All right, Linda, thanks for the call. Here's Rick on WGN. Go ahead, Rick.
Oh, hi. I've got a couple things that I think are kind of neat. I went to a Goodwill not long ago, maybe a year ago, and among all the Little League balls and all that stuff that they had for 49 cents, they had three balls that were absolutely pristine, but it had very elaborate logo on the thing. And it turns out it was an old National League ball from the from World War II, that era. And anyway, they because I can reckon it because the president that National League at the time. Anyway, and then it has USN stamped on the other side. And I did a little research. I found out that these balls were sent to the servicemen so they could play the carriers on the islands and all that stuff. And they're in perfect shape. They must have spent their entire life inside a drawer, if they're like they were made yesterday. And then one more thing I have, I went to a church sale in Park Ridge about 2 years ago, and I got a ball, and I recognized that logo. This was a year ago, and it was had to be after the Goodwill thing, because I recognized that logo again, and again, so I picked the thing up. I bought it for $1, and it was it was a National League ball again. And it was signed by the president of the National League. He was the president from the early 30s all the way to, like, 59. So it was in that era. and I'm driving, I'm riding home, and I noticed that on the sweet spot, very, very faint, but it's really there, because I brought it to the guy in Naperville who verified it, is Rogers Hornsby's signature.
Okay.
So those are the two things I got.
Yes, so you said USN, that stands for U.S. Navy, and those balls are, you know, quite scarce, hard to find. Balls from that era are worth a little bit more money if they actually have the ball case. So they came in a little, you know, paper, a little box. If you have the box that it comes with, it kind of adds the value. But nonetheless, the first ball, which is unsigned, has the U.S. Navy stamp, $50 to $75. Because it's unsigned, but people still pay a premium for those unsigned balls from that era. You said that the ball was signed by the commissioner president. It's actually a stamped ball. You'll see Ford Frick or whoever the president, or, you know, is on there. So it's stamped. It's a facsimile signature, but nonetheless, with Roger.
Oh yeah, I know that. Yeah, but it was his signature. Whoever the guy was.
Yeah,
Harrington or something like that.
But nonetheless, with Roger Hornsby on the sweet spot, fantastic Hall of Famer. But Hornsby also has a fantastic signature. It's very legible, very big, very bold. If it's very faint, like you said, it is maybe only $150, but it could be more.
All right.
Okay.
All right, Rick.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank
all
you.
312-981-7200 is the phone number. Michael Osaki is with us. BaseballInTheAttic.com is the website. And again, you can check him out on Facebook if you want to drop post a picture of something that you're interested in finding out the value of. Facebook.com/BaseballAttic. But you can call us or text us right now at 312-981-7200. Here's Kevin on WGN. Hi, Kevin.
Hey there.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi, go ahead.
Yeah, I went to the very first game at the new Comiskey Park on opening day, 1991. And
the Sox got blown out.
The tickets were kind of big, and they gave us these plastic holders to put them in, sponsored by the Chicago Tribune. Wonder if that's worth anything.
So, yes and no. Yes, because there is value, and I'll get to that value in a second. Because it was a big event, commemorative, so you had all, whatever, 40,000 people that were saving that ticket stub. They all came in plastic holders. They're all in the same condition, which is mint or gem mint. So there's thousands upon thousands of them out there today. So unfortunately, the value is only about $20 to $25.
Yeah, I figured it wasn't worth too much, but yeah. I thought I'd just double check.
All right, Kevin, thanks.
All right, thanks. Bye.
Okay. All right, let's see. Steve is on WGN. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I have an Albert Pujols autograph ball from when he played for the Peoria Chiefs in 2000, and it's an official Rawlings. It's not the game he played at, but I bought, you know, at the souvenir shop, you buy the game played balls, take them down, have them signed. The value bounces around, but I just wanted to see if you could project a value when he goes in the Hall of Fame.
Yes, but, okay, so the value of him going to the Hall of Fame, which is obviously a shoo-in, is not going to impact the value of what you have. What you have is interesting, and I'm going to punt on giving you a value. I'll tell you why. Early Albert Pujols signature is different than what it is today. And depending upon the ball it's on, if it's on a Peoria Chiefs ball, you know, I need to see that. It could be actually very valuable, because what you have is these diehard Albert Pujols fans who will collect anything. And if you have an early Albert Pujols signed baseball, maybe it's on a Peoria Chiefs, you know, baseball.
Or, it's a Rawlings official Midwest League.
Okay, well, Midwest League is still different than, you know, a Major League Baseball. People, if they're missing it from their collection, they may pay a premium for that. So I'm going to punt on the value, but if you email me the photo, I'll be able to tell you kind of in an auction what I think it'll go for.
All right, Steve.
Okay.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, take care. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We got a bunch of people. Everybody hang on. We got some text here. What have you purchased lately? What have you picked up lately?
So when I was in Florida, I picked up a Babe Ruth signed baseball, and it was on the sweet spot. But, you know, me, Nick, I've known you for a long 10 years now. I like the stories. Every time I see something, whether I buy it or I appraise it, I would say, how did you get this? Or how come this is like that? And the guy He met me, him and his wife. The ball actually was his wife. It was came down from her family. And it was her mom's for many, many decades. And the mom passed away, and so you know, it was her dad's. And one day, his daughter, who I met, she's now I don't know, maybe in her 70s, told me how she had it. And she's like, one day I came home, and the ball was in the trash. I was like, what? She's like, yeah, I don't know. I randomly came home one day and asked my dad about this baseball. We haven't talked about it in 5 or 6 years. I said, oh, funny you should ask. It's in the garbage. I threw it out this morning. She's like, what? So she ran down to the driveway to see if the garbage guy came, and luckily he did not. And she dug through the garbage, brought the ball into the garage, never told her father because she thought he would just get rid of it again. And so she hid it from him. And here it is today, saved from the trash.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. How much is it worth?
The signature is pretty faint.
Yeah.
So only about $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
A really strong Babe Ruth signature could sell for upwards of $75,000, $100,000.
It's amazing. All right, hang on. Michael Osaki is with us, and it's baseballintheattic.com. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for some appraisal here on the radio. And we'll get back to this right after a break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and Steve Cochran coming up at 6 o'clock right here on 720 WGN for your morning drive. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right, Michael Osaki is with me from baseballintheattic.com. Michael, we got some texts here we can get to.
Sure.
He's helping people out with their sports memorabilia with some appraisals. 630 area code says, I've got a Michael Jordan autograph on a cocktail napkin that's addressed to my two sons.
Okay, so a couple minutes ago, someone called for a Michael Jordan signed photo. I said $200. This is on a cocktail napkin addressed to your two sons. So the cocktail napkin decreases the value, and because it's inscribed to your two sons, let's say Andy and Dan, it's going to devalue it again. So you're looking at about $100.
That's true of most things. Like if you get a first edition signed by an author of a book and they personalize it, that knocks the value down big time. So if you're going to get an autograph from a sports figure, don't have them go, hey, to you, just have them sign it. It'll be worth more. Sure. On a personal level, you just want to keep it and have your name on it, that's cool. But if you're looking to see if it's going to be worth any money, don't have them personalize it.
You're exactly right. About 15 years ago, Tiger Woods, when he caught wind that people were buying getting his signature on golf balls and selling them on eBay, he made sure when he signed something that it was inscribed. Okay, hey, buddy, I'll sign this for you, but tell me what your name is. Oh, Nick. Okay, I'm going to sign it to Nick from Tiger Woods.
Okay. 630 area code says, I have a handwritten note from Michael Jordan dated around 1980 encouraging my daughter to continue to play basketball after I wrote to him.
Wow, a lot of Michael Jordan callers say this is wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting content.
That's a difficult one, right?
Yeah, interesting content. $200.
Okay. All right. 847 area code says, I have a signed picture of Stan Mikita I got in the late 60s. Is it going to be worth now that Stosh has passed?
No.
Okay.
The value is all baked in there. You're looking at $90 to $125.
Okay. All right. Let's see. Here's Bill on WGN. Hi, Bill.
Hello.
Hi.
Oh, you hear me there? I have a signed Robin Yount 3,000 hits. It's a plaque with his picture on it, a signed autograph, and an unused ticket for that game.
Yes, we actually don't allow Milwaukee Brewers fans to call the station.
You bet. That's funny. I thought I'd break it up a little bit since they had all the Chicago players.
it's worth about $75 to $80.
Hmm.
Oh, really?
All right.
Okay.
All right, Bill.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you.
Next thing you know, somebody's going to call in with a Cardinals question.
Oh, no, that's when I'm going to leave.
Here's Mike on WGN. Hey, Mike.
Hi.
Hi.
I've got a banner that flew on Michigan Avenue that says Mike Ditka Hall of Fame 1988, and it's signed by him.
I love those street banners. There's football banners. They had them when the Bulls won, you know, during the 90s, during the dynasty. There were some banners from the White Sox when they won in 2005. But a signed Chicago street banner signed by Mike Ditka depending upon the size, would be worth between $250 and $350 bucks.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's great.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
All right. And here's Alec on WGN. Hi, Alec.
Hi. I've got a baseball signed by Nellie Fox.
Ah, Nellie Fox, Hall of Famer. Great, great, great Hall of Famer there. Now, do you know a good way to determine if a signature of his is real or not? He never signed it Nellie. It was always Nelson. So that's actually a good tip-off. If you ever see something like at a flea market or garage sale and it says Nellie Fox, it's 99% probably not going to be authentic.
Hmm.
Anyways, Nellie Fox, you said it was a signed baseball?
Yeah.
Is it signed on the sweet spot or a side panel?
Side panel.
Okay. 200 or 250 bucks.
All right, Alec.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
It's an interesting.
It's a tough signature.
That he signed it, Nelson Fox. Is there a reason why he signed it, Nelson Fox?
You know, that was his name. You know, Nelson. Yeah. Everyone called him Nelly. But he was very formal when he would sign items.
Okay. You're getting ready to write a couple of stories for Parade Magazine. One of them is a baseball and music exhibit that's opening at the Grammy Museum.
Yes. So I was contacted by the Grammy Museum about a month ago, and I did not know, because every time I think of the Grammys, I think of music.
Yeah.
They're opening up a baseball exhibit at the Grammy Museum in Los Angeles, and I'm going there at the end of April. I'm going to write a story for Parade Magazine. And if you think about, as they were explaining this to me, baseball and music have been intertwined for a long time now. If you think about when a player approaches home plate, they'll always play a song.
Right.
Take Me Out to the Ball Game during the seventh inning stretch has been sung for over 100 years. And so they've built an exhibit there to draw fans of baseball and music in. And I don't right now know exactly what I'm going to see, but it really sounds interesting. I'm really excited to write the article.
Oh, very cool. That sounds like a fun trip.
Yeah.
And then the Hall of Fame is going to give you a sneak peek at their new baseball card exhibit, and that's opening at the end of May. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, so I've done some work for the Hall of Fame, and a lot of times when people find interesting things, valuable things, they'll call the Hall of Fame, and the Hall of Fame will say, you need to call Michael and have this appraised for insurance purposes, or if you want to donate it to the Hall of Fame, yada, yada, yada. But what they've got, so they've gotten feedback from people over the years, and people really want to see a specific baseball card exhibit. A lot of what I would call baby boomers or empty nesters now, they got started collecting back in the 50s and 60s with their baseball cards. And so anyways, they have this beautiful new exhibit with some fantastic cards. Some of them have been, well, a lot of them have been donated. And there are 10, what they say, holy grail cards that the public doesn't know what they are yet. I know what they are. And it's fantastic. And I'm doing an article for Parade Magazine on that. And there's going to be pictures in there, and we're looking forward to it. I love doing anything I can to support the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and if you've never been to the Hall of Fame, you should go, because it's pretty amazing. It is, and Cooperstown is just cool anyway.
Yeah, the whole town, yeah.
Yeah, the whole town is great. It's great. And I haven't been there in a long time. I got to get back, but I had a fantastic time when I went there, and I highly recommend it. Here's Ron on WGM. We got time for one more. Here's Ron. Go ahead, Ron.
Yes, I have the collection of smoked shot glasses from the American League, and the one glass that says 1991, and they're still in the box. I sent you a picture. There's 14 glasses, and they're all the American League teams. That's when the Milwaukee Brewers were still in the American League. Mm.
Yeah, so really anything from the 90s, whether it's glassware or cards or these keepsakes, they don't have a lot of value because they were mass-produced. And so even though you do have a complete collection of 14, the value is going to be very minimal, maybe $20 for all 14 glasses.
Yeah. Okay, Ron, yeah, the mass-produced stuff is we talk about that a lot. When something is mass-produced, the value goes down pretty much immediately.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, so you're going to the Sox game has been canceled for today for opening day, so they're moving it tomorrow.
Correct.
And you're going to be at Guaranteed Rate.
Exactly. So Friday morning from 7:30 to 8 o'clock in the morning, I'll be on live from Guaranteed Rate Field on WGN TV.
Okay. Yeah, well, good with the morning crew.
The Morning Crew.
Yeah, those guys are great.
Larry and Robin and Mike Toomey.
They're all great. They're all really, really cool. So you'll have fun doing that. So you'll be out there at the White Sox home opener, which is not again, it's canceled today. It'll be happening tomorrow, and you'll be there, and you can check them out on Channel 9 on WGN-TV, 7:30 a.m. Michael, always a pleasure, man. We'll get you back right after the World Series, right around that time, okay?
Thanks, Nick.
Okay, buddy. Michael Osaki is here, and you can check out the Facebook, too, if you want to post a picture or something and you're wondering how much it's worth. It's facebook.com/baseballattic. And also, if you want to send Michael an email, it's michael@baseballintheattic.com. Okay? And also, your phone number, if people want to call you.
Yep, 312-379-9090, 312-379-9090.
There you go. Okay, Michael, thanks, man. We'll take a break. We got the news coming up right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. Excuse me. I thought everybody would want to hear my my cough and reverb. And it's Triple Play Thursday. That means one artist, three songs. Yeah. Get your requests in now, 312-981-7200. Okay, let's tell everybody who that was and who requested it.
So that was Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes featuring Teddy Prendergast. And you know what? They didn't leave their name.
Oh.
I'm trying to find them, trying to see if they left one behind for me. But I know you're out there.
Is there at least an area code?
Yeah, it's from the 301, over from the 301.
So we'll have Harold Melvin, two more Harold Melvin songs. yeah. So, you know, Vic, were you happy to find out what some of the stuff you got there might be worth?
Yeah. I was a little surprised by the Dan Hampton one. I didn't know that didn't draw much, but I guess so. Yeah, pretty good on the, what was the one that he said was the most valuable? It wasn't the Gale Sayers. Which one was? Oh, the Mitch Trubisky.
Yeah, Mitch Trubisky, which
sounds like it'll be.
Yeah.
Maybe I should dump that one off quickly before it drops. That's substantially more than I paid for it.
Yeah.
So I wasn't
happy with that. Now, where do you get this stuff?
Some of them I go to. Some of the events I go to get signatures. Others I just buy from either online or there's a sports shop that I go to when I pick my kids up out in the northwest suburbs. I always stop in there because they have a ton of stuff, and I always find something in out there.
Is football the main thing that you get?
Mainly Bears stuff? That's all I have, I think. I have one other thing, because I know I've talked about it before, that I was raised as a Dallas Cowboys fan.
That's right.
My dad's from Texas.
Right.
So I have some Troy Aikman autographs. I forgot about those. And Michael Irvin.
Oh, okay.
I also have some the famous or infamous Mike Ditka with the bird.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. That's one of my favorite.
Well, we are going to be talking about some of them. You know, this is insane here, Vic. I got this article here about the most expensive sports memorabilia of all time. And how much this stuff is worth is really nuts. I mean, it's just crazy. I got 23 items here. That we're gonna talk about, and now Tom, do you have any sports stuff?
I mean, mainly stuff from my dad in terms of jerseys. Like I've got a Randy Moss Pats jersey that I cherish because my dad was a huge Pats fan.
Oh man,
I know. Yeah, and he's not even from New England,
right?
It was the first place he went when he first came to the States, and there's a huge Irish and Scottish population up there. He fell in love with it. But I do have, when I was a kid, I had a Drew Bledsoe jersey. So if anybody's accusing me for being a bandwagoner, it's just not true.
Not true.
Been there since the Bledsoe days.
So are you still rooting? Do you still root for the Pats?
Yes, I do.
Oh, God.
I know. You should have seen me the day after the day of the Super Bowl. I was getting things thrown at me.
Oh,
I was wearing my Moss jersey and people were like, I hate you so much.
Man. Oh, man.
Tom, I totally understand the position you're in because I was also raised by a dad who kind of trained me to love the team he loved.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, that happens to everybody. You know what I mean? Especially if you're not from where you know what I mean? If you're not from that city. Like, for me, you know, growing up on Addison, six blocks away from Wrigley Field with a father who's the biggest, you know, Cubs fan in the world, I was born into it. I had no choice. I mean, not that I would rather, you know, not, you know, but I'm a diehard Cub fan, always have been since I was born. And it was just seriously, like, you know, to live in that area, to live in Lakeview for the first 18 years of my life, I lived there, and it was all Cubs all the time. And my dad still, I've told you guys this, my dad, and I've said this before, my dad will sit in front of the TV in late September. If the Cubs are 20 games under 500, he'll watch every pitch of every game and still be on the edge of his seat and yelling. I'm not exaggerating. I mean, I'm not kidding. That's for real. 20 games, and there have been many years when the Cubs in September have been 20 games under 500, and there's my dad watching every pitch.
We should be so lucky to have that level of dedication to anything.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's crazy. But yeah, my dad's got Cubs stuff all over the house, just been a Cubs fan his whole life. I don't know if my dad has anything that's worth. I know he used to collect baseball cards, and you know, this is one of those stories that I know that a lot of people have, and I'm sure that Michael has heard this story too. That, like, my dad had when he was a kid. My dad was born in 41, so my dad was a kid. Like in the 50s, you know, he collected baseball cards, like major big time baseball cards, and had like almost like a barrel full of them. But his older brothers, my dad's the youngest of, you know, the in the family by, you know, the next in line to him was 10 years older than him. So that's the difference. My dad, you know, when my dad was born, his youngest brother or his brother next to him was 10 already. So there's a 10-year difference, and then they just got older. The siblings got older than that. So when my dad was collecting baseball cards, his brother would make fun of him, and so he threw him out. So my dad had, and I'm sure that there are stories that I'm sure that every family has a story where they once had what is probably some collectibles that were worth a lot of money. And then somehow they got lost, or somehow they threw them out, or something happened to them. Because you never think anything is, you know, when you're a kid or something, you don't think about the monetary value of things. Like, and I've talked about in the past, you know, we talk about some toys from like the 60s that are worth a lot of money right now. And I had so many of those toys, and the problem was I played with them, so I probably ruined them anyway. Because most of the stuff is worth, you know, if it's in the package, like the Star Wars stuff, you know, you got to have a lot of it. You got to keep in the package. You can't, you know, you can't play with it. What's the point, you know, for it to be, you know, worth a lot of money? But I'm sure that everybody has had, if you guys have stories about like some expensive memorabilia that you had in the past that you lost or you threw out to your eternal regret, call us or text us at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7204. Oh my God, I can't believe I used to have this thing that is now worth tons of money. And it's funny because, you know, we talk a lot about pop culture and toys on the show as well. And you know, like every time I talk about some of these toys and we talk about how much they're worth now, I'm like, oh man, I had that. Or I, you know, we pitched it out when I got older, and then you think about it, and you're like, man, that's a lot of money that was gone.
I've still got my dad's original Game Boy.
The original Game Boy.
Yeah, because he was a businessman that came out in what, 89, and
yeah,
he was on a ton of flights, so he would just get tired of like reading and all that, and he just wanted something to do, so he bought a Game Boy and Tetris. And it kept his attention for all these flights, and we still have it, and it still works.
Wow, you know, it's the memory that I have involving Game Boy is what my friends and I. It's connected to what we're talking about. My friends and I went on a baseball road trip, and this was a long time ago. This is 1992. We went on this road trip, and we rented a van, and there were five of us who went, and we drove to the East Coast and back, and stopped at baseball stadiums and saw games, and throughout all the way over to the East Coast. So we went to Cleveland, and this was before I don't know what it's called now, but we used to call it Jake, the Jake, but it's not the Jake anymore. I don't know what it is now. But back then, it was the big the county stadium where they with the Browns played as well. So so we went there, and we went to D.C. We hung out in D.C. for a while. We went to Baltimore there, obviously, and that was the year that Camden Yards opened. It was the first year of Camden Yards, beautiful park. We went to Yankee Stadium, the old Yankee Stadium, and we went to the Baseball Hall of Fame, and you know, and everything in between. So it was a baseball themed park, and it was a lot of driving involved, you know. And so, in order to keep kind of you know to keep busy while we were driving, one of the guys in our group went and got a Game Boy. And so it was being passed around in the van as we were driving around for that whole trip. And it was Tetris. It was Tetris. So it was that. We were playing that. And then when we got back, he returned the Game Boy. And he got his money back. So we just used it for the trip, and that was it. And, of course, here's the funny thing about that. We had such a blast. That was a really, really great trip. That was just a great trip. But the thing about that of course, you know, says a lot about me is that when we had a day off to spend in D.C. before we went to Baltimore. We were going to spend, you know, like the entire day in D.C. and then get to Baltimore, check into the hotel, and then the next night was the game. So we get to D.C., and, you know, there are so many amazing things to see in Washington, D.C. You know, I mean, you got the Capitol, you got the White House, you got the Smithsonian, you got all this really incredible stuff to see in D.C. The first thing we do when we get to D.C., I insist that we do it. I said, we're going to Georgetown, and we're going to the Exorcist Steps. That's what we're doing, and that's the first thing we're doing. I don't care about the Capitol. You can take the Smithsonian. I want to go to the Exorcist Steps, and that's immediately what we did, and it's awesome.
That's a bucket lister for
me. Oh, my God. I have pictures of me acting like I'm falling down the Exorcist Steps. Did you see the Joker trailer?
I did.
Those are the Exorcist Steps that are.
I think, yeah.
I mean, there are no other steps that look like that.
Or at least they're made to look like
yeah.
them.
I mean, because I was like, wait a minute, those are the Exorcist Steps.
Yeah, it doesn't shock me that Todd Phillips would want to visually reference those.
Yeah, yeah.
I did go to the, I went to Austin, and I went to the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
The gas station, yeah.
Yeah, the gas station.
Oh,
they
man.
Do serve barbecue
That's
there.
That's awesome, man. I would love to go there, man.
I spent like $50 on a cab there, like to get there, and then $50 back because it's on like the outskirts.
Yeah,
it's a while, and I didn't have a car.
I went to the Monroeville Mall
in
Pennsylvania, where they shot Dawn. Obviously, it doesn't look anything like it does in the movie because the movie was shot in 1977. So there's a lot of different stores in there now. But this was a while ago, though. This was a long time ago when I went, but it still looked different. But yeah, it was the first thing was the Exorcist Steps. And it, what's funny is that I have a buddy who's from D.C., who grew up in D.C. And, you know, he and I told him, you know, I was like, yeah, I went to the Exorcist Steps. He goes, yeah, I used to smoke pot there all the time. That was like where everybody smoked pot was the Exorcist Steps. If you were a pothead in Georgetown, you'd blow weed.
Yeah.
Because right now at the bottom of the Exorcist Steps, at least when we went, and this was in 1992, at the bottom of the Exorcist Steps was like a hollowed out, like a old garage that was filled with graffiti and stuff. So clearly it was not, you know, it was just a place where punks went and blew weed. And it's right by the highway, like the right by a highway. Like it overlooks a hill right by the highway and by the house. By the way, the house that they use in The Exorcist is about four blocks over. So when Jason Miller goes flying out the window at the end of the movie, I don't know if he flies four blocks and then hits the steps because in the movie they make it seem like the steps are right outside the house, but the house is four blocks away.
I like to believe that he flew four blocks.
But, well, he was possessed at the time. So, but anyway, that was fun. The Exorcist Steps was a very cool thing, and then we ended up obviously going to see all the other stuff in D.C. and we went to the Smithsonian. And again, this is our level of intelligence, me and my friends. The first thing we did when we went to the Smithsonian, there's so many things to see in the Smithsonian. We immediately go, "Where's Fonzie's jacket? And where's Archie Bunker's chair?" there's all this insane history and all these unbelievable things to see in the Smithsonian Institute that are historical and beautiful and educational, and we immediately want to see Fonzie's jacket and Archie's chair. And we did, and it was cool. All right. We're going to take a break. And if you guys have memorabilia or had memorabilia that was worth something and you got rid of it due to peer pressure or just because you guys were clearing it out or maybe your parents threw it out, had no idea what it was worth and tossed it out, just like that Babe Ruth ball that Michael told the story about, and you regret it now, you used to have some stuff that's worth a lot of money. We'd love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. And I also do have an article here about the most expensive sports memorabilia of all time. And you're not going to believe what some of this stuff is worth. So join us at 312-981-7200. And a little bit later on, we are going to talk about people who collect weird stuff. And I mean weird, weird stuff. So some of the craziest and weirdest collections of all time. We'll talk about that. And so there you go. Okay, we'll take a break. They dreamed of a new career, but a medical training program left local students shattered, and it could happen again. WGN-TV investigates tonight at 9. Welcome back, everybody. Harold Melville, Blue Notes. Triple Play Thursday. You mean Triple Play Thursday? It's one artist, three songs. You get your requests in. It's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. And we're talking about collectible stuff this morning. We're going to get into some really, really weird collectibles. People collect a lot of weird stuff. But right now, I want to talk about some expensive stuff. And if you had some items that turned out to be worth a lot of money, but you tossed them out or they were lost, we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. And I have some of the most expensive sports memorabilia. We'll start right now with Muhammad Ali's Fight of the Century gloves. Both Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier were undefeated and claimed to be heavyweight champion when they met in Madison Square Garden in 1971. The fight was a thriller. Won by Frazier on points after he sent Ali to the canvas in the 15th and final round. So Muhammad Ali's Fight of the Century gloves are worth today $632,000 for a pair of boxing gloves. $632,000.
Do you think they still have the sweat on them?
Yeah.
Still smell like yeah, Muhammad's
I'm
fists.
Sure they do. Here's Doc on WGN. Hey, Doc.
Hey, how's it going?
All right.
Love this topic. Hey, you're a big fan of Matthew McConaughey, aren't you?
Yeah, that kind of goes without saying, Doc. Yes.
well, I thought so. Do you have any of his clothing line?
I do not. I'm aware of it, but I do not have any of his clothing.
You know, he had a charity, JKL, Just Keep Living.
Yeah.
And then his clothing line supported that. And I walked into a Dillard store in Kansas City, and they were closing it out. And I bought like $800 worth of it. Got a sweater, a beautiful khaki shirt, several pairs of slacks, about 10 t-shirts. Don't you have some big anniversary coming up, like 30 years in the business or something?
No.
I thought you were talking about some.
No, this is my 30. This is my 34th year. So I guess next year will be 35, and it's my 21st year with my own show. 34 years with the station, starting with Roy Leonard, 21 years with my own shows.
And a birthday in July, is that right?
I do have a birthday in July, yes.
July. So do I, and I think it's unfair that people get to refer to us as a cancer on the staff, you know? Well, maybe I'll hook you up with one of these McGonaghy t-shirts. I've only worn once or twice.
All right, Doc, that would be cool.
They're pretty cool.
All right. Thank
all right,
you.
Man.
All right, Doc.
Good
take care.
Great topic.
All right, buddy. Take care. Doc, I love that guy. How about this? Hank Aaron's last home run ball. It sold in 1999 for $650,000. Today, it's worth $977,675. Baseball is a game of numbers, and for most fans, no number stands out more than 755. That's Hank Aaron's career home run total. Aaron hit his last home run on July 20th, 1976, in his home park at Milwaukee County Stadium as a member of the Milwaukee Brewers. The groundskeeper who recovered the ball had Hank sign it and then reaped the profits. Next here, we got Babe Ruth's 1933 jersey. Now, this article mentions 23 items, and I'm telling you, more than half of them are Babe Ruth related. The next time we talk to Michael, I have to ask him if Babe Ruth is maybe the athlete that demands the most money for the memorabilia, because he's on this list it's insane. So Babe Ruth's 1933 jersey, when it was sold in 2006, it was sold for $657,250. Today it's worth $823,300. And they say here, the Bambino is the gold standard of sports memorabilia. 70 years after his death in 1948, he remains baseball's most iconic figure. It's not surprising that Sultan Swing is also the Sultan of memorabilia. In 1933, he hit 34 home runs with the New York Yankees and led the league with 114 walks because no one wanted to pitch to him. And that's the 1933 jersey, today worth $823,300. I mean, the entries, that Babe Ruth has on this, I mean,
it's like, it's, I would say over 50% of that list.
That's crazy. 312 area code. By the way, if you guys had some memorabilia or some things that you had back when you were a kid or when you were younger and they were lost or you got rid of them or you threw them out and now they're worth a lot of money, let's hear those stories, because I happen to have done that as well. I had a lot of very, very expensive toys and action figures and things like that. And, yeah, so 312-981-7200. So 312 area code says, Star Wars action figures go for $100 now. It would really be worth storing and transporting a doll for the past 40 years to make an 80-hour profit. That's true. You have more fun playing with them, right? Do you have Star Wars toys, Tom?
Oh, yeah, because 99, I was about 6 years old, and Phantom Menace came out.
Right.
So the whole Star Wars toy thing was back in full force.
Yeah.
I had Darth Maul. I had, Darth Vader and a little Anakin as well.
Yeah.
I didn't really play with the Anakin one.
Yeah.
I don't know how much he's worth.
What's really funny is when my friend saw Phantom Menace, he's a big Star Wars fan, and he hated it. And he was in a packed theater, and you could just feel the audience hate the movie. Like, the energy in the theater was like, oh, my God, this is the most disappointing thing I've ever seen. I waited 20 years for this. So at one point, there was a guy who just couldn't take it anymore. And he was sitting about four rows in front of my friend and, groaning. Like, every time something stupid happened, he'd be like, oh, God. You know, like, so upset at this complete, betrayal of that George Lucas had done. But this was my favorite part. My favorite part was when, and I don't know, I mean, I've only seen The Phantom Menace once, and that was enough. But there's a part where they ask Liam Neeson's what his Jedi juice rating is, or whatever it is.
Oh, midichlorians.
Yeah, whatever it is. And then he says, it's off the charts. Well, really? Yeah, he didn't have a father. Then they say that he didn't have a father. And this guy who'd been groaning the whole movie, after he says that line, like, he did not have a father, or whatever the line is, this guy goes, oh, yeah, now he's Jesus. The guy couldn't take it anymore. And then the same guy at the very end of the movie when the credits came up, he stood up, turned around to the rest of the audience and went, okay, who thought that sucked? And people started laughing. He goes, I'm going home to watch Empire. All right, we got a break here for the news, and we'll be back after this.
Nobody no more sleeping in bed. No more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war, and poverty.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. And Triple Play Thursday continues with Harold Melville. And if you guys want to jump in, it's one artist, three songs. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. And you can do that, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We are talking about collectibles. And a little bit later on, I've got some stories here about people who collect just weird stuff. Like, I don't know if the people are weird, but certainly the stuff they collect is weird.
Can we top broken laser pointers?
Oh, well, that's another one. Yesterday we were talking about someone who actually collected broken laser pointers, which is one of the stupidest things I've ever ever heard in my life. Because
that's
that
like
was the,
taking a hamster to a veterinarian. You just don't do that. They're disposable. You just throw them away.
But the guy, and that was the reason why we brought that up is because that was actually the first thing that was bought off of eBay. It was the first item that was bought off of eBay. It was put up there as a test, not even real. But somebody did say, yes, I would like the broken laser pointer because I collect them. Okay. Here's another example of why everything goes back to Seinfeld. You guys are not as crazy maniac Seinfeld fans as I am. But, you know, George Costanza's dad, Frank, played by the genius that is Jerry Stiller. Do you guys remember? I mean, do you remember what Frank Costanza collects?
No.
TV guides.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because there's an episode where he takes the TV guide.
Well,
right?
No. Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Elaine takes it because they're on vacation. Frank and Estelle are on vacation, and George is in. That's just when George was living back at home. He didn't have a job, and he was living back at home with Frank and Estelle. And so she wanted something to read or something on the train ride back from Queens.
Yep, yep.
And so he goes, here, read this. And she's like, TV guide? And so she takes the TV guide, and she's reading it on the subway, and she meets a weirdo who is in love with the TV guide. And then as soon as Frank comes home from vacation, he goes, where's the mail? This stack is too small. Where's my TV guide? And that's when you discover that he collects the TV guide.
Do they still publish TV guide?
I don't think so.
I know they probably still have a website.
They used to, you know, because TV guide used to be, you know, smaller. It was like a Reader's Digest. That's, you know, back in the day. And then I remember they changed it to full magazine style.
You know, I'm going to jump in here because, you know, they still... The Reader's Digest is still in circulation. I don't know if you know that.
Mm-hmm. No, I do know that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jeannie subscribes to that. She loves it. No.
I like Reader's Digest,
I think
too.
That's so old school.
It is full-on old school.
I don't know anyone else who does that.
Who's under 70.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no. She's an old soul, I guess.
No, I like Reader's Digest. I really do.
Do you really?
Okay. I do. I'm not kidding. I don't subscribe to it or anything, but when I come across a copy of it, usually in like a doctor's office or somewhere, you know,
or my apartment
or your apartment.
There
you go. But yeah, so that's a weird collection. Frank Costanza collects TV guides,
and you can still subscribe to TV Guide.
Can you?
Yeah, it's that magazine format.
It is though. They changed it to the full magazine format, which I did not approve of. By the way, I liked it better when it was the smaller Reader's Digest size.
Yeah, those are still small. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, now you can subscribe to TV Guide. You get a free TV Guide fleece blanket.
Oh, yeah.
And a free TV Guide wine tote. I don't...
a TV Guide wine tote?
Yeah, I don't know.
Do you know what kind of mockery you would be made of at Ravinia if you brought a if you brought a TV Guide wine tote?
Ravinia.
You would be mocked. All of the Michael Bublé fans would mock you at Ravinia with your TV Guide wine tote. We are talking about things that you collect and that are worth money and that you probably threw out. And basically, the most expensive sports memorabilia, which consists mostly of Babe Ruth items. Here's another one. Babe Ruth's 60th home run bat sold last year for $666,000. And then Babe Ruth's 1934 World Tour uniform, 2005, it was sold for $771,000. Now it's worth $999,500. It's almost $1 million. It's worth almost $1 million.
That's incredible.
Isn't that nuts? Some trace the Japanese love of baseball to this 1934 barnstorming tour, which capped off the Bambino's last full season with the Yankees. On the roster were Lou Gehrig, Jimmy Fox, Lefty Gomez, Charlie Gerniger, Lefty O'Doul, and Mo Berg. The piece is the full uniform, even the socks that Babe wore on that tour.
Gross.
Everything's going to smell real bad, I would imagine. You put that uniform on and then put on Muhammad Ali's gloves, and you won't have friends anywhere.
You'll smell like victory.
Yeah. It's the only way that you can get away with going to Ravinia with the TV guide wine tote. 630 area code. Danny says, I had all the Universal Monster models and the boxes in the 70s, and one day when I was in college, I decided I was too grown up, and I put them in the garbage, in garbage bags, and threw them all away. Okay, here's the thing. I had all of the Universal Monster models. All of them. If you and no, but they weren't in their boxes. I actually put them together and put them on. My mom allowed me to actually put them into the living room with the china in the china cabinet. I had all my glow in the dark, and they were. You can look them up, Tom. Aurora Monster Models. Aurora Monster Models. That was the company, and they were models that you would put together, but they were snapped together. They weren't like the difficult models. They were very easy, and they were glow in the dark, and they had all the classic monsters from Universal, and I loved them because obviously I grew up on the Universal monsters, and I loved it. I watched Creature Features all the time, loved horror movies, and I adored those models.
You got one going for so this one's the Aurora Monster model of the original Mummy.
Uh-huh.
In box.
Yeah.
$600.
You gotta be kidding me.
Yeah. It does glow in the dark, Nick.
Well, they all did.
They glow in the dark. That's a premium.
You gotta be kidding! I had that. I didn't, but it wasn't in the box, so I don't know if it would be worth anything. I mean, maybe not $600, but I had all of them. I had everybody. I had the Frankenstein monster. I had Dracula. I had the Mummy. The Wolfman. Everybody. Creature from the Black Lagoon. $600 for the Mummy.
Yeah.
Oh. Man.
And you're not even going to... I really get with your idea of... You got to play with it. You got to take it out. You got to show it up. Otherwise, that's the real value of it, not just having it sit on your shelf.
I agree. I totally agree. And you know, but the thing is, like, you don't... I never really played with the models. Once I put them together,
no.
I would put them on shelves and stuff, and I'd look at them, and I would put them under the light so they would glow in the dark better.
Yeah.
But, oh, man. This Danny guy's probably pulling his hair out right now to hear that he had the Universal models
there
with the
is.
Boxes.
$600, Danny.
Just for the Mummy. $600 just for the Mummy. 309 area code says, I still have 2,000 plus LPs, but no turntable. Oh, get a turntable, man.
Yeah, you get one for like $250.
Yeah.
Pretty good one, too.
And you can get really good turntables. You can get good stylus now because vinyl is in.
It's back, baby.
Yeah. Speaking of vinyl, we got Record Store Day coming up, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's in a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get Jim Hankey.
Oh, he'll
there.
Be here.
Yeah. 847 area code says, many articles of first edition Star Wars toys sold at the garage sale for $1 to $2 each, and I'm still kicking myself.
Oh, man.
This hurts, man. Catherine says, when I was in middle school in 1984... I wrote a fan letter to Walter Payton. He wrote back to me on his Studebaker letterhead paper, which is a type letter, and he signed the letter. He also sent me an autographed photo. I also wrote fan letters and received autographed photos from Vince Evans, Ryan Sandberg, Jody Davis, and Rick Sutliff. Being a middle school girl, I promptly glued every photo into my scrapbook. And they're still glued into that book, which is in my closet. Ugh. That's Catherine. Well, she got all excited. Um, 847 area code says, I had Transformers, He-Man figures, and tons of Hot Wheels. We moved several times, and for about a year, I lived with an uncle and a cousin because my stepfather and... we're going through a divorce. When I went to live with my mother, she had no idea where all the toys went. Thanks. 773 area code says, when my daughter was young, I purchased all the special holiday Barbie dolls, and I never let her play with them. When she moved out, I gave them to her, and I have no idea what she did with them. If she still has them, they're like 30 years old. They got to be in the box, right?
Got to be in the box.
Yeah. All right. How about no more Babe Ruth stuff here?
Naturally.
1933 signed home run ball. On July 6, 1933, hey, that's my birthday. But I wasn't born yet. The Babe was 38 and would have just two more seasons to play. He hit a mighty home run in the third at Comiskey Park to become the first player to hit a home run in the All-Star game. giving the American League the 4-2 victory. Chicago baseball fan Earl Brown caught the ball, then got the Babe to sign it 2 weeks later. His family sold it for $700,000 in 2006 to pay medical bills. It went, today it's worth $1,008,400. Million dollar baseball. All right, how about this? More Babe Ruth dominating the sports, the expensive sports memorabilia list. Babe Ruth's 1932 shot in the dark jersey in the fifth inning of the third game of the 1932 World Series at Chicago's Wrigley Field on October 1st, 1932. Babe Ruth pointed to center field, or didn't, depending on which story you give credence to. What's undeniable is that on the next pitch, he hit the ball over the wall in the direction in which he had pointed, or didn't. This was his 10th and last World Series. In 2005, that jersey, the shot-in-the-dark jersey, went for $940,000. Today, it's worth $1,217,000.
Oh, jeez. Man, student loans erased.
Here's Orlando on WGN. Hey, Orlando.
Hi, Nick.
Hey.
Hey, man, I grew up in the 80s, and I had a G.I. Joe collection, like the smaller G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
And I sold them. And I regretted that. Now I'm buying them back. So I got my collection back.
Is it worth anything?
Well, some of them are here and there. They are now.
Yeah.
It depends on what, you know, pieces you buy.
Okay. All right, Orlando. Thanks, buddy.
All right, dude. Peace out.
All right. Thank you. Here you go. That's not the real G.I. Joes, by the way. I just want to make sure people know that.
The real G.I. Joes.
I grew up with the real G.I. Joes.
Kung Fu Grip,
Lifelike Beard, all that stuff, man. And they were like they were action figures. They were big. They were like a foot.
I hear they're reusing that G.I. Joe hair.
In what?
Brian Urlacher's head.
Oh, come on now. What are you? All right. Did you drink Henny Youngman juice again this morning? What's going on, man?
It tastes so good.
Boy, that might show up on Out of Context.
Oh, darn.
We're going to find out. You know, you're going to make Out of Context.
I know. I'll be the first to know, too.
Yeah, because you check them out. By the way, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, You Big Dummy, Fly Jams Friday, all the regular features will be back tomorrow. You know what they are. Let me quickly run it down so you guys can keep your ears peeled and send off some emails to contribute. It's Straight Out of Context. That's when you listen 24/7 to this radio station and whenever anybody at any time says something that you can pull out of context, and it's like a double entendre, and it sounds kind of dirty, and it makes you giggle. Jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. nickdshow@gmail.com. And Nick D Show Spies, that's when you listen 24/7. And whenever anybody mentions me or the show in any capacity, and they're talking about me, we want to know about it. You become a spy, and jot down the day, the time, who said it. And again, as Nick D Show Spies, send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. And we'll get to all those regular features tomorrow. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to wrap up the sports memorabilia and then just get into just like weird collecting. Just really weird stuff. Right after this on 720 WGN.
Baby, I feel good from the moment I ride.
Triple Play Thursday, everybody. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. who requested the Kinks?
That was Rasko.
Nice job. You got to love the Kinks, man. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. Triple Play Thursday, one artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Coming up, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on 720 WGN. Okay, we've been talking about some very expensive sports memorabilia, much of which comes from the world of Babe Ruth. And from the 262 area code, they just sent us a story here that from the LA Times, that Charlie Sheen is $4 million richer after selling two pieces of Babe Ruth memorabilia during the inaugural Leland's.com Invitational Auction. The 1919 contract of Ruth Sale from the Boston Red Sox to the New York Yankees. Wow, he had that. Whew. Went for $2,303,000, while the outfielder's 1927 World Series ring went for $2,093,927. The opening bid for each item was $100,000. The winning bidders had not come forward as of Saturday. These record-breaking prices show how, once again, that Babe Ruth dominates the baseball auction world in the same way he did in the game, says Josh Evans, which is Leland.com founder and chairman. The five-page contract is the Yankees copy that Barry Halper once purchased from the estate of former owner Jacob Rupert. Sheen purchased that Rupert copy in 2005. The contract is considered the most important document in sports history. Yeah, no kidding. There were three copies of it. The Red Sox copy was sold for $996,000 to a Yankees fan at an auction in Sotheby's in 2005. The American League copy has not been seen. 1927 World Series ring is the first of four titles that Ruth won with the Yankees. That season, Ruth batted 356, 60 home runs, and 156 RBIs. My God. My God. Statistically, one of the best in MLB history. Ruth went 6 for 15 with 2 home runs and 7 RBIs in the Yankees sweep of the Pirates in 1927 World Series. The highest amount ever paid for a sports memorabilia item was the $450,658 paid for the 1920 Babe Ruth game jersey. Yeah. How about boxing gloves worn by Muhammad Ali again? This against Floyd Patterson. Muhammad Ali and Floyd Patterson did not like each other, and unprecedented hype marked by the two boxers' mutual dislike of each other preceded their heavyweight match on November 22nd, 1965. In just the second defense of his heavyweight title, Muhammad Ali won lopsided 12-round TKO over former two-time champ Patterson. The gloves that he wore are now worth $1,200,000. Let's see. Let's move here since we're running out of time. Babe Ruth's bat for his first home run at Yankee Stadium went for $1.6 million. Paul Henderson's 1972 Summit Series jersey is the most expensive hockey item sold as part of Canada's greatest athletic moment. The jersey worn by Paul Henderson in the legendary 1972 eight-game series with the Soviet Union. And it is now worth $1.4 million. Babe Ruth's 1919 contract that made him a Yankee is worth $2.3 million. Topps Mickey Mantle card, as Michael was talking about earlier, the kind of, you know, the holy grail of baseball cards, is now worth $2.8 million, and it was just sold at $2.8 million. Mark McGwire's 70th home run ball. It's worth $4.6 million. $4.6 million. It was sold in 1998, that year, for $3 million. The reasons why Mark McGwire's 70th home run ball from 1998 season went for $3 million aren't clear to everyone. It's not the ball from the year when McGwire broke Roger Maris's single season record of 61 home runs, and it doesn't represent the record for most home runs in a season, which is held by Barry Bonds. But the free market teaches us any lesson, it's that it's worth what someone will pay for it. $4.6 million. Let's see. The Rules of Baseball is an 1856 document called The Laws of Baseball. It's worth $3.3 million. Rules of Basketball, same thing, from 1891, $4.9 million. And then the most expensive are cars that were used in. We got two Ferraris, a 62 Ferrari GTO, which is worth $39,900,000, and the 1963 Ferrari GTO, most expensive car in the world. It was driven by top first class, world class drivers, $70 million.
Woo!
So,
I wonder who's got that much scratch lying around.
Well.
I mean, a few people.
You could just sell off some Babe Ruth stuff.
And you think they take trades?
Yeah. You know, give them a Babe Ruth jersey, and they'll give you a TV Guide wine tote. It'll be...
You'll be the talk of the town.
That's exactly right. That those wine totes, those TV Guide wine totes, are going to be worth a lot of money someday. And I wouldn't be surprised if we come out after we talk about the next thing that we're going to talk about. If someone actually does in this collection of strange weirdos here, somebody might collect wine totes. I'm not really sure, but what we're going to get to in, after the news is indeed some of the weirdest stuff that people collect. And it's some of it's really, really weird. And if you collect anything that you think is kind of unusual, what are your collections? What do you collect that, you know, you just, you know, you started collecting them, whether it be TV Guide like Frank Costanza or anything else? Unusual collections. That's what we're talking about. If you have any, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. News is coming up next.
Let's go. Welcome back, Chicago White Sox. Hey, baseball belongs right here, 720 WGN.
All right, welcome back. Triple Play Thursday, everybody. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. It's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. Get your requests in. 312-981-7200. And that's the Kinks. There you go. Triple Play Thursday. You still got one more to go for that. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're talking about collectible stuff this morning. We had Michael Osaki in from baseballintheattic.com to appraise some of your sports memorabilia. And you can check out baseballintheattic.com for all information. You contact him there, too, if you're still interested in having some of your sports stuff appraised. And then we were talking about the most expensive sports memorabilia. And now we're just going to get to some weird stuff. There are a lot of people who collect some strange things, have some weird collections. And I also want to talk to you guys. If you guys have stories about people that you know who collect unusual things, or you yourself have an unusual or a weird or a strange collection of things, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Do you know anybody who has any collections of stuff? Done?
I mean, I know some people that still collect Pokemon cards from when we were kids.
Oh, God, really?
Yeah, they're smart, too. They've paid off some bills.
Have they, really?
Yeah, 100%.
Wow.
Pokemon cards, Magic the Gathering, if that rings a bell.
Yeah.
Like the first trading card game. People make some serious bank.
I remember everybody thought the Beanie Babies were going to be able to, you know, people will be able to pay off their mortgage with the Beanie Babies, and that didn't happen.
No.
Did not happen.
I did have Beanie Babies as a kid. Didn't collect them.
Yeah. I remember the craze like it was yesterday. It was insane. I remember that there was a run at McDonald's because McDonald's was offering, in one of the Happy Meals, they were offering a Beanie Baby.
Yeah.
And I guess it was one of the more, what was supposed to be one of the more valuable Beanie Babies.
Mm-hmm.
And people were like drive-thrus with, there's like a line of cars out on the street in the drive-thrus, and people were just buying Happy Meals by the dozens just so they could get the Beanie Baby.
It's wild. Yeah. That's what happens when you flood the market.
Yeah.
It loses all value.
It's exactly what happened. But it was a craze for a while. I mean, it was a craze there for a while. It was in the 90s, too. I remember that. So, but anyway, what do you guys collect, or what do your friends collect, or your family, that you think is unusual? 312-981-7200. All right, here we go. These are some people who have some very weird things, and I'm looking at this article, and they do have pictures of these people with their collection, so I can probably describe some of these with you, for you. There is a North Carolina dermatologist named Manfred S. Rothstein, who owns 675 back scratchers from 71 different countries. And I'm looking at them. Some of them are really weird. Some of them are shaped like hands. There's one that looks like a turkey. There's one that looks like a scary clown. And he's surrounded by back scratchers, this guy. He's sitting in a room. There's a bunch of them in front of him. He's got like a china cabinet shelving unit behind him, all filled with back scratchers. 675 back scratchers from 71 different countries.
That's scary.
Yeah, and he looks a little nuts. I've mentioned this before. My dad collects pens.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think that's an unusual thing to collect. He's got like hundreds and hundreds. I can't even tell you how many he's got. He's got them like in cups. They're all over his desk. different times of pens. If, you know, if a company had their logo on a pen, he has it. If, you know, they sell pens of any kind that are attached to any kind of sports or anything like that, he has it. And people give him pens. I give him pens every, you know, for his birthday and for Christmas.
Does he write? Does he actually use them, or does he leave them?
He does use them.
Yeah.
But not, he can't use all of them.
No, of course not.
He's not able with the sheer amount of pens and novelty pens as well as my dad. I got him last Christmas. A collection of emoji pens.
Oh, boy.
So they're yellow pens, and at the top is an emoji. And it was, I can't remember how many there are in the set, but there was a whole set with a bunch of emojis. And he loves them.
It came with the poop emoji, I imagine.
Yeah, it did come with the poop emoji. And it had all the other ones, the laughing, the crying, all that stuff. This is unfair to people who do not have Apple products. I'll tell you why. Sven Gulli, my good friend, Rich Coes, Mr. Sven Gulli, by the way, celebrating 40 years playing Sven Gulli this year. 40 years. And we were talking about things that were 40 last week. I didn't even mention Rich. He playing this character for 40 years.
Yeah.
We're going to get him on.
Yeah, he'll come.
He's going to come on. And of course, he's going to be at Flashback in August because he's there every year. And I get to introduce him. It's always the highlight of Flashback for me. Except last year when I was hanging out with my future ex-wife, Dana DiLorenzo. That was definitely the
naturally.
I introduce Rich every year because he hosts the costume contest, both the child version and the adult version of the costume contest. And to me, that's always the highlight of the weekend. I introduce Rich, and then I immediately sit down and watch him work the room. And he's hilarious. He kills. That goes without saying. But anyway, so Rich is now offering Sven Gulli emojis, a collection of Sven Gulli emojis that you can use. But only to iPhones. And I'm a little angry about that. Because I would definitely download those, and I would definitely use Sven Gulli emojis. There's no question about it. But I can't because I don't have an Apple product. I have an Android phone.
That's going to be a strongly worded letter.
Yeah, I'm going to call Rich right now and wake him up. Hey, what about emojis for the people who have Android phones? And they're cool, too. They're really cool.
I'm going to download them right now.
They're available for you.
Oh, yeah.
You can get them.
So if I were to text you with them, you wouldn't see them?
You know, I don't know that.
We're going to test that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that's the case. I think I would be able to see. I would imagine I would be able to see them. I just can't download them. Yeah.
We're going to test that out.
Okay. All right. All right, how about this? Unusual collections. By the way, if you know anybody who collects unusual things or you collect unusual things, 312-981-7200. Carol Vaughn. She's 65. She's from Birmingham in the UK. She has an impressive collection of more than 5,000 bars of soap from all around the world. She's been collecting bars of soap since 1991. And the picture, she's a very jolly looking woman. She seems incredibly happy. She's sitting on what appears to be a mountain of barred soap, and she's holding a shower scrub brush in her left hand. She's got a giant bar of soap in her right hand and a back scrubbing scrub brush in her left. And it appears to be just a mountain of different colors and different types of bars of soap. 5,000 bars of soap from around the world.
I got to wonder, how does one get into that?
I don't know. Like, do you go, you know, I like soap. And she must really like soap. I mean, like, really, really like soap to have over 5,000 bars of soap. Okay, here's the one I mentioned earlier. 30,000 toenail clippings. But it's in this facility. This is not just some guy alone in his room, you know, with like two garbage bags full of toenail clippings. This is actually done in a research facility for medical purposes.
Okay.
So that's, you know, and it's three professionals who are sitting there. But the one guy on the end, though, they're holding up like a certificate that shows that they're like a licensed medical facility, and
sure.
the toenail clippings are for research and medical research, and I can understand that. But this guy on the end looks a little too happy to be sitting by the toenails. The guy, if you by the way, the article, if you want to check it out, the article with all the pictures is on our Facebook page. So you can go to facebook.com/NickDShow right now. Like us, too, while you're there. Like us. facebook.com/NickDShow. Like us, and then you can actually just look at the article itself that we're talking about and these pictures. And if you scroll down to the 30,000 toenail clippings, tell me the guy on the right on the end doesn't look like a weirdo. He looks a little too creepily happy to be sitting at a table where there are 30,000 toenail clippings.
Yeah, it's Donald. He's not. We have to keep it in a locked closet because of Donald.
Because yeah,
gets too close as he gets the bloodlust.
He just looks creepy, man. Dave says my mom collected thimbles. Oh yeah, a lot of people do. Yeah, a lot of people collect thimbles.
Aren't they all the same?
No, you can get them in different colors and different styles. You can get some thimbles are also. You can get them. There is also. I think they sell like thimbles with state emblems on them, so each state has their own thimble. I know that's the case with spoons, like the little decorative spoons that you can get. So how about this? A guy collects Daleks from Doctor Who. In 2011, Rob Hull's collection had a whopping official record, 571 Daleks. By the way, of all sizes. There's like, you know, you've seen Doctor Who. He's got like five life-size Daleks and then a bunch of smaller ones and teeny like model-sized ones. But since then, it's doubled in size since 2011. Exclusively collecting Daleks from Doctor Who. So, all right. Doc, we heard from Doc a little bit earlier. He bought some Matthew McConaughey clothing, man. All right. Hey, Nick, a large hotel retail complex in Kansas City had an annual exhibit for over 10 years. It would last 2 to 3 months, limited to around 30 collectors each year, and only around 25 items per collector. It was always cool, and people were lined up to display. They changed the name every year. Things people collect, more things people collect, even more things people collect, and so on and so forth. I was part of it for 2 years with Superman stuff. 1 year, my most rare, expensive, and unique stuff. The other year, my collection of 25 Superman ties. Other cool stuff I remember, there was a cool Charlie the Tuna collection. That's very specific. On a collection of bird's nests, from hummingbird's nests to the biggest. Most unique collection was human hair jewelry, which would be rings, bracelets, necklaces, very detailed and ornate, from around the 1900s, I think. Wow.
All right.
Stuff people collect. That's what we're talking about. 312-981-7200. Tim says, my former wife's grandma collected salt and pepper shakers, shelf after shelf after shelf of them. When she passed away, I believe the seven kids split them as evenly as possible. There you go. That's what I'm talking about, man. Unusual collections, and we've got downright weird ones, too, from this article. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. I've been talking about collecting and collectibles this morning, and now we're talking about weird collectibles. 312-981-7200. Make Sundays your official night to tour the city. Watch Chicago's Best at 10 p.m., then stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events on See Chicago at 10:30 p.m. on WGN-TV. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here, and we're here until 5 a.m. It's Triple Play Thursday. And, yeah, you can join us for that. It's one artist, three songs. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Who requested that?
So that was still our Kinks.
Oh, I didn't recognize that.
Yeah, that's I'm Not Like Everybody Else.
Okay.
Rasko.
It's still okay, that's the last one though, right?
Yeah, that was the last one.
Okay. I just didn't recognize that. And Yeah. Let's see. We're talking about weird collecting, stuff that you collect that's kind of weird. I've got this article here that where people are collecting a lot of very strange stuff. And if you have an unusual habit of collecting things, 312-981-7200. Here's Trucker Rich on WGN. Hi, Rich.
Hey, Nick.
Hey.
My wife thinks it's, I don't think it's weird, but my wife does. I collect Hot Wheels and Matchbox cars.
Uh-huh. I used to have a ton of those when I was a kid. I don't know what I did with them. I don't know where they are.
But I don't do the fantasy type cars. I look for cars out of the 50s, 60s, and 70s, you know, like GTOs and different Fords and stuff. But then I'll go to the junkyard and find the grill out of a hood of a car like the Chevy. I got a 85 Chevy pickup truck grill. Well, all the Chevy Matchbox cars go in the Chevy grill. And I got a Ford grill
there
and a Ford sit on for a shelf.
Yeah.
And that's right along with my bucket seat living room chairs in my room, my man cave, and my bench seat for the couch. But I do have two weird ones that you'd probably find funny. I've got the clown truck from Maximum Overdrive.
Okay. Yeah, the goblin truck from Maximum Overdrive.
Yeah. Yeah, and the little flatbed military vehicle with a machine gun on it. Those are the two little fantasy toys I've got.
Oh, okay.
I just collect the realistic-looking Matchbox cars, I guess you'd say. So.
Yeah. Okay. I don't think that's too weird, Rich.
Well, she does, because like if you go into a big box store and they've got them giant tubs of Matchbox cars in there, like for 99 cents, I'll go through them for about an hour while she's shopping looking for one specific car.
Well, you got to spend, you got to kill your time in some form, right, Rich?
Yeah, either that or I can sit over there in the women's department while she's shopping for clothes.
Yeah.
So,
all right.
You know.
All right, Rich, thanks, man.
Have a good one.
All right, take care. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're talking about unusual collections. And here's another one from that article. Okay, you ready for this? This is a woman who collects umbrella cover sleeves. The largest umbrella cover collection is owned by Nancy Hoffman from Peak Islands, Maine. She has 730 unique umbrella cover sleeve items. And the picture of her, she seems like an interesting woman. She's got she's playing the accordion, and she's wearing one of those umbrella hats. You know, the hats that umbrella, there are umbrella cover sleeves hanging all over her wall. Yeah, she plays her accordion. She seems very happy with herself.
I didn't know that umbrellas needed sleeves.
Yeah, no, you can put a cover on the umbrella so that like if you bring them inside someplace, they're not going to drip all over.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Not going to drip all over the floor or anything like that, and it keeps them. You know, I think like depending on the material of the umbrella, it protects it. So yeah,
got to cover it.
Yeah, that's going to end up on Straight Out of Context.
Crap.
Here's Dan on WGN. Hi, Dan.
Hey.
Hey.
What's
up?
I got this Ringling Brothers collection that I found under some stairs in an old house years ago. And it's from like 1887 to 1929. I've got contracts, tickets, handwritten, and plus whatever articles that were like made into like scrapbooks, and I have five of the books of Three Rings. I mean, they're like hundreds of pages.
And this is all Ringling, and you said you found this stuff?
Well, I was trespassing, and I went into an old house, and it was under the stairs.
Oh, so you stole the stuff then. All right.
Well, no, they set the house on fire like 2 weeks later, the fire department, like a test fire. So I actually saved them.
All right. Have you checked to see if they're worth anything?
I don't. There's a circus something in Wisconsin, Milwaukee somewhere.
Is that Baraboo?
I think I should contact them somehow.
Yeah, I think you should. And don't contact the law, because I don't know. I don't know if you're still hot for... for stealing the stuff. What movie did I just see? A terrible movie that I saw where they were stealing stuff out of a house that was going to be abandoned. They were going to burn the house down. God, it was terrible. And I just saw it in the theaters. Oh, man. Oh, you know what it was? It was that that Dog's Purpose movie. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
We went to see that, and I can't remember. There's like an abandoned house across the street from where he lives, where the guy lives, and he takes one of the puppies. A bunch of puppies were born, and takes up one of the puppies. And wants to try and free the other puppies because the landlord is a jerk and he's going to burn the place down even with the puppies in there. That's what I was remembering. That's what reminded me of the story. It's like Dan just walks into an abandoned building, takes a bunch of circus stuff.
He's out. Zoom.
I'm gone. I got some circus stuff to get. Oh, thank you, Dan. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. 708 area code says, how about the lady on the Carson show who collected potato chips that were shaped like things? You know this story, Tom? You probably don't. You're too young.
Yeah, way too young.
Okay. There's a woman on Johnny Carson's show. This was probably in the 70s. And Johnny used to have, real people segments. They still do that on talk shows, but Johnny was the best at it. Johnny Carson was the best at it. He'd have real people who had unusual jobs or unusual stories, and he'd bring them out on The Tonight Show and do a segment or two with them. So this woman worked in a potato chip factory, and she had to check the quality of the chips as they went by on a conveyor belt, you know. And she would take the chips that looked like things. Like, one looked like a camel, or one looked like this. One looked like Abraham Lincoln. And so she would collect these things and leave them at home. And so Johnny heard about this and had her on the show and made her bring her collection. And this is a classic moment, one of the classic moments in Carson, in The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson history. The woman is on, and she loves her collection. She's so excited about it. She's worked in this potato chip factory for years and years, older lady. And she's very excited. She's like, this one looks like Abraham Lincoln. And then they show it up to the camera, and it does looks a little like Abraham Lincoln. This one looks like a goat, you know, or this one looks like that. And so while she's reaching over, she turns away from Johnny. While she's reaching over to get another potato chip, he's got a bowl of regular potato chips, just a bag of regular potato chips. And he goes into the microphone. He goes, crunch. And he bites one. And she turns around thinking that he ate the Abraham Lincoln chip.
Oh, my God.
And she starts to freak out. And she's like, oh, no. And she starts to get very upset. And then Johnny's like, oh, no, I'm sorry. Sorry, it was just a joke. And he pulled out the bowl of potato chips. It's like, this is just regular potato chips. Everything is fine. I didn't touch your collection. Everything is fine.
Oh, Johnny.
It was hilarious. It's one of those, you know, like, whenever they do, like, a best of The Tonight Show thing.
Yeah,
whenever,
it's going to be on there.
Whenever Johnny would do anniversary shows, he'd do the potato chip lady bit.
Oh, boy.
She was so mortified, man. And Johnny immediately, I'm so sorry. He pulls out the chips. He goes, look, these are just regular potato chips. I swear I didn't eat any. Okay, we have to break. Weird collections. That's what we're talking about. Do you collect things that are unusual? And we still got a bunch more on this article about people that collect really weird stuff. 312-981-7200. News after this. Is that Roxette?
Yep.
How the hell are we going to get three songs from Roxette?
Oh, they've done at least three.
Okay.
I don't know. They were requested.
I know. I understand. They're I understand. There. But I'm just trying to think. I don't think they had three hits. That's all I'm saying. So, all right. Well, who requested Roxette?
That was Ike.
All right, Ike. It's Triple Play Thursday. And it's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. That's the phone number. Hey, we've been talking about people who collect weird stuff. And we've been talking about collectibles this morning here. But now we're getting into the weird stuff. And I've got an article here that has some people who collect some strange stuff. How about Coca-Cola cans? 39-year-old David Andreini from Pesaro, Italy. Had started collecting Coca-Cola cans since he was 15. His collection includes special edition and commemorative cans from almost every country except Cuba and North Korea. And there's a picture of, like, just hundreds of Coca-Cola cans of different shades and colors on his shelving units, just filled.
I knew a guy in high school that did that. He collected all Coca-Cola paraphernalia.
Well, you know, you weren't around during this, but there was a fantastically huge craze in the 70s called beer can collecting, where people would collect beer cans. I'm not kidding. This was a huge, huge thing in the 70s and 80s, especially the 70s. And it was everybody across the country. It was a giant thing. People were, oh, I got a beer can collection. They would just have them.
So you're telling me that in the 70s, collecting beer cans was cool and people thought it was interesting.
Yeah.
But when I do it, it's tacky and childish.
Yeah.
Okay.
You should have grew up in the 70s.
Probably, yeah.
But they, it was a huge fad. It was. I mean, you know, there was a point of pride in the, you know, they were mostly most beer can collections were in the basement. That's where most people kept them. You know, like the guys would keep their beer can collections in the basement.
I think the labels looked cooler back then too.
But they were, I didn't understand it. I never collected beer cans.
No.
You know, when it was at the height of its popularity, I wasn't old enough to drink beer anyway. So, but people were like, oh, they were looking for specific beer cans from around the world, and they would be very, you know.
I could see that making a comeback now that you got all the craft beers. You got crazy labels and stuff.
Yeah. So, anyway, that was the thing. How about this? For the last 40 years, Elkhart County's Joanne and Cecil Dixon have collected chicken-related items. Anything chicken-related. Chicken fridge baskets, chicken magnets, chicken planters, chicken ornaments. And I'm looking at their picture, and there's nothing but chickens on their shelves. And nothing but chicken knickknacks, and they're both holding chickens. They have over 6,500 items in their collection. How about Sherry Groom? She has an amazing collection of troll dolls of all sizes, not just the little ones, because she's holding one that's about the size of a toddler. So she collects them, and she has over 3,500 troll dolls. And again, she's sitting in this room with nothing but troll balls, dolls surrounding her of various sizes, including a large section of the small ones that everybody knows about.
What was the height of that popularity? Like
the trolls?
Yeah, the trolls.
80s?
80s.
I would think. 80s into the 90s?
Because those are the ones with weird hair, right?
Yeah, you would spin them and their hair would, you know, go nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't like
that. And they're supposed to be, the other thing was you would get, the troll dolls were also supposed to be good luck. Like if you had a troll doll.
Yeah, wishing trolls or something like that.
You would have the trolls. No, wait, listen, they made a movie 2 years ago.
They did.
Called Trolls, which made like a ton of money. Probably because of that Justin Timberlake song.
Yeah. Can't Stop the Feeling?
Can't Stop the Feeling.
Yeah. It is a banger.
It's a great song. It's catchy as hell.
Yeah.
And it was a big hit. Movie wasn't great, though.
No.
But it was Anna Kendrick and Justin Timberlake. Those are big names.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't terrible. I've seen worse animated movies.
That's true.
Those Hotel Transylvania movies are much worse. Okay. Are you ready for now? Now, we were talking about weird, okay?
Yeah.
This is weird. John Reznikoff... Isn't that the lead singer of the Goo Goo Dolls? John Reznikoff. That sounds like I'm sure it's not the same guy. But the lead singer of the Goo Goo Dolls, that lead singer of the Goo Goo Dolls has either that name or a very similar name, I think. And when was the last time anybody thought of the Goo Goo Dolls?
What? It's Johnny Resnick.
Oh, okay. There, yeah, that's it. Johnny.
Except there's two Z's.
Yeah,
I don't really understand how that works, but yeah, Johnny Resnick.
Johnny Resnick. So I actually saw the Goo Goo Dolls live because my favorite band, Buffalo Tom. You ever heard of Buffalo Tom?
No.
Oh,
well, I've heard the city.
No. Buffalo Tom, the band.
Okay.
It's a trio. It's a three piece band out of Boston. They're one of the greatest rock and roll bands of all time. Do yourself a favor. Download the album, Let Me Come Over. Buffalo Tom, Let Me Come Over. I'm upset. Oh, by the way, I gave you a copy of The Vinyl Shop to watch.
Yes.
There are 9,000 Buffalo Tom references in it because...
Well, now I'm going to have to listen to the album.
They're one of my favorite bands of all time.
Okay.
So, they, you know, they're a great band out of Boston, and they opened for the Goo Goo Dolls. So I went. I went just because Buffalo Tom was opening. And it's amazing. Buffalo Tom, one of the greatest rock bands, in my opinion, of all time. And I've actually gotten to know the lead singer really well. Like, Bill Janovitz is the lead singer and the songwriter. And he actually wrote music for a play that I wrote and directed that I was in. I actually got original music from him, and he came to Chicago to see it, and he wrote the music, and it was unbelievable. It was mind blowing that, like, one of my music heroes, actually, I got to work with him on a play that I did. But anyway, they opened for the Goo Goo Dolls, so my friends and I went, and actually it was at the time when Vinyl Shop was running, because it was everybody from Vinyl Shop went. We all went, like half the cast and the stage manager and me, we all went, and so Buffalo Tom does their set and they kick ass. They come out and they're like, hi, you know, Bill just comes up and goes, how you doing? We're Buffalo Tom. We're from Boston. And they kick into their set and they do a fantastic set. They do like 40 minutes and it was unbelievable. And they were, of course, just designated to a small portion of the front part of the stage, as most, you know, support bands are. So we're like, all right, well, why don't we stay? Because at the time we saw the Goo Goo Dolls, and I don't want the world to see
Iris.
Me.
Yeah.
Iris. Okay, that was like the biggest song in the world at that time. And the I'm Dead movie with Meg Ryan and the Wings of Desire remake with Nicolas Cage. City of Angels.
Oh, yeah.
City of Angels. Okay, it was on that soundtrack, and that movie was out then, and blah, blah, blah. And so we're like, okay, well, just stay, because I like Iris. I actually like that song. So I'm like, all right, well, we'll stay and see what these guys are all about. So the complete opposite of what Buffalo Tom did. Buffalo Tom came out. They said, how you doing? We're Buffalo Tom. We're from Boston. Boom. Bounced into the songs. So we're waiting, and I look, and we were up. We had a private box. We were up like, it was at the Riv, I think, if I remember correctly. It was the Riviera.
Yeah.
So we are up in a box, and we're looking down on the stage, and I noticed that the stage is entirely covered in thick plastic. Like, thick plastic covers the stage. So the lights go down. Suddenly, you know, massive smoke machines start to come out. So everything, like I said, Buffalo Tom walked out on stage. You know, no lasers, no smoke. They were just like, how you doing? We're Buffalo Tom. Boom. Okay, so these guys, first of all, the lights are going nuts. They've got crazy special effects. There's tons of smoke pouring out onto the stage. And, the big intro music is building and building and building and building. And then the song kicks in, and they come running out on stage. You know? Running! And, and so the bass player is barefoot. Okay, so they didn't walk out on stage. They ran out. They tried to make this insane, running, crazy rock and roll entrance, man. We're a rock and roll band. We're running out here. So they get out on stage. They start the songs, and they're playing, and it's not good. And so we stayed, and by the third song, which was Name, you know the song Name?
Yes.
And I don't know your name. Diddle, 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 diddle. Okay, so he starts to play that riff, and then he's like, hey, man, I just want to say, we caught a lot of crap for this song, man. And then, you know, I like it when I'm walking through a grocery store and I hear this riff. And he plays the riff. And he starts going on and on about how, you know, the fans of their early stuff hated the song and blah, blah, blah. And they called them sellouts. And so they halfway through the song, I looked at everybody else. We were watching it. And I'm like, am I the only one that wants to leave? And everybody's like, no, let's go. So we left. Like three songs in, we left. But within those three songs, it literally felt like that the Goo Goo Dolls were, they studied a rock band cliche book before they walked out on stage. Like, every ridiculous rock band concert cliche that you can do, they did within the first three. It was like watching Spinal Tap. It really was. It was like watching, like, a real version of Spinal Tap. And so... so then, like, years later, I'm telling this to Bill, Bill from Buffalo Tom. I'm telling him this, one night after one of his shows. And, So we're hanging out backstage, and I said, you know, I went to see you guys when you opened for the Goo Goo Dolls. He's like, oh, yeah. And I'm like, man, that had to be a nightmare. He goes, no, they were really nice guys. He's like, they were really, really nice guys. And I said, well, they sucked. They were terrible. And he's like, they were really nice guys. And then he told me actually touring with the band live was much worse. Like, those guys were jerks, apparently. So, but anyway, he said, Goo Goo Dolls were really nice guys. And I was like, let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question, Bill. When I was up in the balcony, I noticed that the stage was covered in thick, like rubber like plastic. Is that true, or was I nuts? And he's like, oh no, that was a big thing for them. They had to have the thick plastic covering the entire length of the stage. That was a demand of theirs, that they had to have that taped down and covering the stage. And I'm like, why? And he said, because the bass player liked the way it felt under his bare feet.
What? I wish I had any sort of response to that.
I'm not making it up, man. I'm not making it up. Because the bass player liked the way it felt under his bare feet, and he always wants to play barefoot.
My God.
And I did notice that he was barefoot when I saw the show, and I was like, but I didn't put the two together. It's like, I like the way it feels. This is what happens when you become a big rock star. You go, you know what? Let's just cover everything in rubber.
Yeah.
And plastic. And I'm just going to play barefoot because I'm a rock star.
I love reading tour writers. Because I know generally they're for safety, but like, well, I love reading the demands.
No, they're hilarious. The writers are great. But for the most part, they're there to make sure that people are reading their contracts.
Exactly.
That's why the band does it.
I know.
Some of them are really hilarious, but some of them aren't. Like, I mean, like you get a star like, you know, like Mariah Carey, her writer is ridiculous and it's real. So some of the divas have some seriously ridiculous writers, and those are real. But the ones that are most absurd, I'm trying to remember the band that did the best ones, because there was one band in particular. Oh, the Foo Fighters. The Foo Fighters would do the most absurd, ridiculous backstage riders of all time, and none of it was real. They didn't care. They were just, first of all, they thought it was funny that they would demand the most ridiculous things you could possibly imagine. And like I said, a lot of people do it to make sure that the promoters are actually reading the contract.
Right.
So. But anyway, so that's true. So next time you see Goo Goo Dolls, expect plastic all over the stage. Although they've fallen from grace. I don't think the bass player is going to be able to demand plastic rubber for the stage anymore.
I don't think they could demand a stage at this point.
Johnny Reznikoff? What the hell is his name? John Reznikoff. He's the guy who...
Tough times.
He's the guy who... But let me just tell you before we break. He's the guy who collects... Are you ready for this? The most extensive and expansive collection of celebrity hair locks in the world. His collection includes hair from famous celebrities and historical figures, including Albert Einstein, Abraham Lincoln, Marilyn Monroe, Ludwig von Beethoven, Elvis Presley, and my favorite writer of all time, he's got a lock of hair from Edgar Allan Poe.
What? How can you even verify that?
I don't know.
That's not real.
Because it smells like absinthe? I don't know.
Well, hell, I could give him a lock of my hair covered with absinthe. Jesus, wow.
All right. Well, we're going to break here. We got weather, and then when we come back, we'll talk more about these very, very weird collections that people have. If you want to jump in with your thoughts, 312-981-7200. All right. Today, early morning temps hover around 40 degrees. Temperatures rise just a little, peaking in the mid-40s inland, upper 30s at the lakeshore. Rainfall totals about a half to three-quarters of an inch. Cloudy, chilly overnight. For tomorrow, weather improves as morning clouds scatter. Highs near 60 degrees and lower near the lake. Actually, much better weather. For the opener at Comiskey at Guaranteed Rate Field. It's had two name changes since then, and I still call it Comiskey. Wow. Saturday, highs near 50, showers will reach the area late at night. And on Sunday, southeast to south winds will increase 20 to 30 miles per hour as a storm system approaches. The temperatures rise to the highest level in nearly 6 months with highs in the mid-70s. 46 degrees right now at O'Hare. It's 47 at Midway, 44 at the lakefront. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back with more after this. Paradise was a hit. I forgot about this
there
song.
There you go.
I forget. You know why I forgot about it? Because it's Roxette. That's why I forgot.
Yeah, but it's in Pretty Woman.
Oh, no. Don't get me started on that movie.
You don't like Pretty Woman?
I hate that. I hate that movie.
Oh.
I hate that movie.
That's too bad.
It's a it is
big
a,
mistake.
It's an
huge.
It's an insanely misogynistic movie. And
I hear that. I can hear that.
And it's a movie that glorifies prostitution. I hate it. I despise that movie. So, but I didn't even realize it was in that.
Yeah, it's definitely in Pretty Woman.
Yeah. Okay. I've only seen it once. So, anyway. All right, well, we got one more Roxette song to hear.
Oh yeah.
For Triple Play Thursday. Yeah. So that's coming up. Coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right, we're talking about weird collections. How about this guy? You're gonna enjoy this one. Graham Barker has 22.1 grams of belly button fluff. It's the largest collection of belly button fluff in the world. It's his own, if you're wondering. And he started the collection in 1984.
Well, thank God for that.
Yeah. And he's got them in three. There's three large jars in front of him. Filled with belly button lint and fluff.
I have never gotten belly button lint in my entire life.
I did when I was younger. I don't now.
Yeah, I feel like that's... How do people... How
I
does
don't
that
know.
Happen?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
How many grams of it?
22.1.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That's a little bit too much.
Yeah. Well, I think 1 gram is a little bit too much. How about this one? 60-year-old McDonald's owner Mike Fontaine has a mind-blowing collection of 75,000 pieces of McDonald's memorabilia. The collection occupies over 7,000 square feet of his home in Pennsylvania. It includes 1,000 McDonald's cups, uniforms, 11,700 lapel pins, old displays, nearly every Happy Meal toy that the chain has ever produced, and there's also two famous Ronald McDonald mascots. Life-size.
Okay.
This guy looks insane, by the way. Do you really want a room with a bunch of Ronald McDonald's in it? I don't. You sleep at night?
Maybe it's the only way you can sleep at night. Feeling watched over
by Ronald McDonald.
Yeah, big smile and a Happy Meal in his right
sure.
hand.
Sure. How about this? The Carsten Tews from Germany has this one. I think is pretty hilarious. Has a collection of over 1,600 different mobile phones and cell phones.
That is, I think that's cool.
And I'm looking at the picture. It's pretty hilarious. You know, he's got the big. Old one with the big antenna that you, you know, the Lee Van Cleef Escape from New York. that's what I always called it, the Lee Van Cleef Escape from New York model with the giant Cronenberg. He's coming over the wall. I've seen that movie a couple times. You know, I've never shown that one at my film club.
Well,
I got it. You know.
Can we get an Escape to L.A.?
Escape from L.A. I back Escape from L.A. Man,
I love that.
I back that movie. I don't care.
That basketball scene.
It's great. It's the same movie as Escape from New York.
I know.
But I still like it.
It's
I don't care.
Very good.
I like the shark, the Jaws shark. I like the surfing scene with Peter Fonda.
Yeah.
Everything that everybody hates about that movie, I like.
It is a great movie.
I think it's terrific. It's Carpenter, man. Carpenter's only made one movie. He's only made one movie that I didn't like a ton. And I get a lot of heat for not liking this movie very much. But I don't like vampires very much. With James Woods. That's I get a lot of heat from people. It's like, how can you not like vampires? It's one of Carpenter's best movies. And I'm like, it's a very crazy movie and it's kind of mean spirited and it just seems like an angry Carpenter. I defend Escape from LA, man.
It's so good.
Oh, I mean, it's not Escape from New York. Escape from New York is one of the greatest movies of all time. But,
Escape from L.A. has its own special charm.
Absolutely. No question about it. No question about it. Oh, by the way, in my apartment, I have a framed poster of Escape from L.A. and not Escape from New York.
There it is.
I forgot. Yeah. It's in my kitchen. It's in my kitchen.
So every morning you're making eggs.
It's a full one sheet. It's the official full one sheet framed, and it's in my kitchen. It's right next to my kitchen table.
Do you give it a little rub, you know, like, thank you, snake?
It's actually a two-sided poster.
Really?
It's a two-sided poster. I flip it back and forth.
We'll see. So
one side is Escape from L.A., the other side is Eyes Wide Shut.
That's an interest.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
A friend of mine had a video store, and he went out of business.
Uh-huh.
And he gave me a bunch of posters when he closed. And he had it framed like that. So I was like, all right. I don't know.
It's just like a reversible.
Yeah.
It's so they're back to back.
Yeah.
Okay.
The posters are back to back. And so one side, you turn it over and you hang it up and it's Escape from L.A. And then you flip it over and it's Eyes Wide Shut.
I thought they were literally the same poster. Like someone decided.
No.
Yeah.
It's you flip the frame around.
Right.
And so, you know, I give equal time. Right now it's on Eyes Wide Shut. But I give it equal time. I flip it every couple of months. I'll flip it.
Flip it, Fidelio.
I'll flip it for Escape from L.A. So, all right, let's take a quick break here. The news is coming up next, and then we've got more weirdo collections to talk about right here on 720. And also coming up a little bit later on, we have a Blackhawks Express from last night's game. They actually won. Oh, and we have a little hockey. Also, if you weren't listening at the beginning of the show, there's a little hockey thing involving me that I'm. My mind is blown about, and I'll tell you about that a little bit later on, too. All right, let's take a break. The news is right after this.
When were these guys popular?
80s.
80s.
Yeah. All right. Okay. I wouldn't say popular. I would say...
Around there,
yeah, late 80s. Well, I mean, you know, Pretty Woman came out in early 1990.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think they had already kind of that song was already a hit, because they were definitely, Roxette was definitely late 80s.
Yeah, I remember hearing them on like the adult contemporary radio in Crystal Lake.
Yeah. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Triple Play Thursday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. One artist, three songs. We're live in the Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. And we've been talking about collecting stuff this morning. A little bit earlier on, Michael Osaki from baseballintheattic.com was with us, and he was helping everybody out with their sports memorabilia to see how much it's actually worth. And then we started talking about really expensive sports memorabilia. And now we're just talking about people who just collect weird stuff. And if you want to jump in here with you people who collect weird things, or you know somebody who collects some strange things, 312-981-7200. Article that I'm looking at has some very, very strange stuff. We have some texts, too. 262 area code says, my mom collects aprons. Okay. 618 area code says, the girls at Old Marshall Fields at the cosmetic counter used to collect miniature perfumes filled bottles and hundreds of them. That's Jim in Carbondale. You know, I dated a girl years ago who was one of those, you know, it was a part-time gig that she would get for a little extra money. She was one of those sprayers that would come up to people and spray them.
Oh, God.
As they in the perfume department in Marshall Fields. She worked at Marshall Fields in Vernon Hills.
I gotta say, I was not a fan of that, of walking through
and having people come up and go, hey!
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I was like 12.
Yeah.
And, you know, guys would go, oh, try this. I'd be like, I don't wear cologne. I'm 12.
Yeah.
Hit me with the Hugo Boss right in the face.
She did that part time just to, you know, to make some extra dough. And she wasn't particularly fond of it either. But she was really pretty. So that's, you know, I think that's why they gave it. And I don't know what the hell she was doing with me. I met her at an Elvis impersonators convention. I'm not making this up, man. There's an Elvis impersonators convention.
Was she convincing?
Oh, no. She wasn't one of the impersonators. That's very good. So, like, all these Elvi were hitting on her. Because, we, you know, like, the thing ended, and she's very attractive. And so, like, all these Elvi were hitting on her. These Elvis impersonators are all, like, trying to hit on her. And one Elvi actually said to her, you know, because her name is Leslie. And the guy says, hey, man, you know, if we get married, your name will be Leslie Presley. And I'm thinking to myself, well, no, because you're not Elvis Presley. You're a guy who works in a pizza place. So, but anyway, I ended up taking her. I ended up leaving with her. And the Elvi were not happy. Because I had, like, really, like, because this was back when I had, like, really, really long hair. And I was wearing a Public Enemy hat backwards, of course. Because this was back when I was, like, this was 1991. When all I listened to at that time was hip-hop. And, you know, it was just like, it was Ice Cube, it was Public Enemy, it was all the, you know, NWA, all that stuff. I was way into it at that time. And I had like camouflage shorts on and boots. That was the look I had. And meanwhile, all these guys are dressed up like different Elvi. And here's this jerk, you know, with, comes in and steals this woman from the Elvi.
I just can't get over the plural of Elvis is Elvi.
Well, let me really quickly tell this story. At the very end, there were 365 Elvis impersonators there. Have you seen Honeymoon in Vegas with Nicolas Cage?
Yeah, yeah. Sarah,
this was before that. And so when I saw Honeymoon in Vegas, people were like, that's the most ridiculous thing. I said, no, it's real. Now, I don't know about the parachuting Elvi. I don't know about that part. But I've been to an Elvis Presley impersonators convention, and it's real. So at the end of the convention, all of the Elvi got up on stage in the ballroom because there was a hotel right next to the expressway in Rosemont, and so they all get on the stage, and the stage collapses, and there were Elvi everywhere.
Oh man, no!
It was nothing but collars and sideburns all over the floor. So, but it's a unique way. I was always hoping that Leslie and I would stay together, you know, get married and stuff and have a family, because that's the best, like, how we met story that you could tell. It's like, yeah, where did you meet? We met in an Elvis Presley impersonators convention. Unfortunately, we only dated for a year. So, you know.
Oh, well.
630 says, I collect gargoyles. I have over 1,000. You ever see the movie Gargoyles? TV movie from the early 70s?
No. There's a Disney show called Gargoyles.
Yeah, no, this is
different.
This is full-on horror movie. Bernie Casey plays, you know, the main gargoyle. It's about these gargoyles that are flying around and terrorizing people.
As they do.
And there's a girl who was in it. Her name is Jennifer Salt. Actress named Jennifer Salt. She was in Sisters, Brian De Palma's movie Sisters.
Oh, yeah, wait, is she the girl that's...
She's not Margot Kidder.
Not Margot Kidder, right. Yeah. Oh, I love her. I love Sisters.
Yeah, oh, Sisters is a great movie. It's De Palma, again, yeah. Great. He's got a new one coming out called Domino.
Very nice.
Yeah. Anyway, Jennifer Salt was also in Gargoyles, and she was one of the first sort of, like, crushes that I had when I was a kid. I watched Gargoyles, and I remember feeling kind of funny while I was looking at her, and I was like, what's going on here? And, Rich, Sven Gulli shows Gargoyles, you know, he's shown it pretty regularly. He showed it a few months ago. And I watched it again, and I felt the same way about her. I was watching the movie, and I'm like, man, that Jennifer Salt, man.
Something about her.
You know what you should do? You should just take a look. You Google just Jennifer Salt Gargoyles. And you should see the movie, by the way. It's sort of a legendary horror. It's a TV movie. It was made for TV, but it's a legendary horror TV movie. And it's real, and the effects were great. The effects were done by Dick Smith. Dick Smith did the makeup effects.
Oh, that's amazing!
He created all the gargoyles, yeah. And everything. And it was one of those, you know, one of those made for TV movies that didn't feel like a made for TV movie. Like it felt like it was more expensive. The makeup was amazing. So yeah.
Oh, wow.
What are you looking at? The makeup, or are you looking at Jennifer Salt?
Both.
Okay. All right. from Tom, I have a large collection of the internet startup discs. That's pretty funny. Everyone received them in the mail and just tossed them. I stowed them away. There are so many different ones and in various packaging. That's pretty cool. That's pretty unique. He should go hang out with the guy with the cell phones.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty funny. All right, you ready for this one? The world's largest ABC nicotine gumball. ABC meaning already been chewed.
Ugh.
Barry Chappelle's brilliant idea was born when he was on an international flight. Of course, he couldn't smoke, so he started chewing nicotine gum. 6 years and 95,200 pieces of gum later, he created this 175-pound gum ball. And he's no longer smoking.
That's nice.
It's chewed nicotine gum that's been stuck together into a ball. Here's one.
Well, at least it's just his.
Yeah, that's
Imagine
true.
If he was like,
it was somebody else's. Can I? You gonna swallow that? You gonna spit that gum out? I'll take it.
Yeah, give me that Nicorette.
Yeah. All right. How about this? Anything Dalmatian? Karen Farrier is obsessed with Dalmatians, owning over 3,500 spotty items. And it looks like she's in a crazy house.
Probably like, a little bit like Cruella de Vil over there.
Well, that yeah. I mean, that's the thing. If she loves Dalmatian so much, why is she kind of she's dressed in Dalmatian skin, which is the whole evil part of that movie, is that she wants to make clothing out of the skin of these Dalmatians. By the way, you know they're doing a live-action Cruella de Vil movie.
Yeah, Emma Stone.
Yeah.
Set in the 80s.
Listen, I think that's great casting.
I'm here for it.
Yeah.
I'll see it.
Well, I love Emma Stone. I think, you know, I will see anything with her in it. I love her. I just think she's fantastic. Except for Aloha.
Yeah.
Yeah, where she was cast as an Asian.
Hawaiian native.
Hawaiian native.
Emma Stone.
Asian. What was funny was, did you see the Golden Globes when Sandra Oh and Andy Samberg hosted?
Yeah.
Did you see when she made Sandra Oh made the Asian joke and they cut to Emma Stone?
Yeah.
And she's like, I'm sorry. I'm really, really sorry.
It was Cameron Crowe.
Yeah.
I couldn't say no.
You can't say no to Cameron Crowe. All right. Okay, let's take a break here, and we got more weird collections. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. If you know somebody or you are somebody that collects weird things, we've got more of these weirdos from this article. Sugar packets next, by the way. He's been collecting them since 1978. Phil Miller is his name. And it started where he collected all the presidents of the United States sugar packets. That's how it started. Okay. Here's your forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. Early morning temps will hover around 40 degrees. Temperatures will rise only a little, up to the mid-40s, inland upper 30s of the lakeshore. Rainfall totals, we're going to get some rain, 1/2 inch to 3/4 inch of rain. It'll be cloudy and chilly overnight. Tomorrow, the weather improves. Morning clouds scatter. Highs get to near 60 degrees, but lower near the lake. On Saturday, high near 50. Showers reach the area late at night. And then on Sunday, southeast winds increase to 20 to 30 miles per hour when a storm system approaches. The temps will rise to the highest level in nearly 6 months, highs in the mid-70s. Currently, 46 degrees at O'Hare, 47 at Midway, 44 at the lakefront. Okay, let us take a break, and when we come back, we'll have more weird collections. 312-981-7200. Get real in the morning with Larry Potash, Robin Baumgarten, Paul Conrad, and the entire WGN-TV morning news team. That's weekdays 4 to 10.
What goes up? The spinning wheel spin. You got no money and you got no home.
Who wanted to hear Blood, Sweat, and Tears?
So Blood, Sweat, and Tears was requested by Elaine.
Elaine.
Yeah.
All right, Elaine. That's Triple Play Thursday.
Yeah.
And Blood, Sweat, and Tears. That'll be our last Triple Play Thursday for the morning. How's it going, everybody? Nick DiGilio here. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. We've been talking about collecting stuff this morning, and now we're into the wow, that's weird that you collect that. If you want to jump in here with a text or a call with something that you collect or you know somebody else collects that might be a little bit unique or strange, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Talk and text. All right, here's one. Wacky couple Bob and Lizzie Gibbons share their home with a rather unusual collection of 240 love sex dolls. According to the couple, they like dressing the dolls up and even taking them on shopping trips. And I'm looking at the picture. These people are nuts. And it's just the guy, by the way. It's just the man. Maybe Lizzie's taking the picture. But they're in their kitchen. And all four of the people sitting at the kitchen table are sex dolls, are love dolls, are blow-up love dolls. And they like dressing them up and taking them on shopping trips.
Mm.
Yeah.
They always seem really surprised.
Yeah, they do. They do, don't they? Oh! Remind me to tell you the diner story, put it on the grill story. I've told it many times on the air. Maybe I should tell it. I should just tell it to you off the air. And if my listeners who may have heard it like 900 times would be like, don't tell this. Don't tell the. It's the put it on the grill story. And if anybody who's been a regular listener of this show knows, it's a real thing that happened. And it happened in an all-night diner that still exists that's very close to my apartment at Pulaski and Elston. My friends and I went in there late one night, and a lot of weird stuff happened, including a guy. The reason why I think about this, including a guy who was sitting at the end of the there's only a counter in this place. They didn't have tables.
Yeah.
It was just a counter. And it was a 24-hour diner, and everybody, you know, you go there, you were drunk and stuff. We'd been out drinking, and we went. And there was a guy at the counter, and I'm not making this up, who had a breakfast in front of him, you know, like eggs, bacon, stuff like that. And seated next to him, on the stool next to him, was a blow-up doll, fully dressed, with a breakfast in front of her. And he was feeding the girl and pretending that she was real. That's just one thing that happened that night when we were there. That's just one thing. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. Because when the dude comes in and starts screaming, put it on the grill, that's when the story went into David Lynch land. That's where I was just like, when did we walk into Twin Peaks? When did this happen?
Oh, man.
I'll tell you, because I've told it on the air 9,000 times.
Yeah, we'll do that one.
I'm sure that listeners are like, Nick, please, give me a break. I don't want to hear put it on the grill story again. So, but it's a true story, and it's one of the craziest. I mean, seriously, we were like, what in the hell is happening? And we were like done eating, and we were just like nursing coffee because we didn't want to leave because we were witnessing such insanity. Like, we can't leave. We've got to see what's happening. And then we ended up leaving after a while because it got like too weird. I don't know. Anyway, but yeah, so at some point I'll tell you the put it on the grill story, but I don't want to put my listeners through it for the 50,000th time. So, all right, let's see. We got some people on the line. We're talking about people that collect weird things. Here's Linda on WGN. Hi, Linda.
Hi, how are you tonight?
All right.
You guys are great. You're fantastic.
Thank you.
I don't have anything weird, but I have a couple of items that I have kept throughout the year. Do you remember Mel Tillis when he sung Coca-Cola Cowboy?
I do not remember that. I remember Mel Tillis, of course, but I don't remember Coca-Cola Cowboy.
Yeah, he sang that. Well, we were on vacation traveling, and we stopped at this burger joint. And I don't know why, but they had the pitcher and the glasses to match. And the glasses are upside-down glasses, so
yeah.
to speak.
Yeah, no, I know what you're talking about. I remember those Coke glasses, yeah.
I got every one of them. And then I have two radios that belonged to my grandmother back in the 50s.
Mm.
And one is all tubes, so I don't dare turn that thing on. And the other one, that one, the tube one, is made out of wood. The cabinet on that is made out of wood.
Yeah. My parents have an old radio. My parents have a very, very old radio that's actually it's like 4 feet tall. Like this thing, and it's like a piece of furniture. You put it up against the wall.
No, this is countertop.
Yeah, this was a full on radio, like a stand up radio. Yeah,
I don't know if it's worth any of that. I don't know if it's worth anything or not, but I just keep it.
Yeah,
it's in my china cabinet for looks.
All right, okay, Linda, thanks.
All right, thanks, guys.
312-981-7200. Here's Mike on WGN. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Nick. How are you?
All right.
My best friend in college. His grandmother, I went to their house one year for Thanksgiving. She lived in rural Indiana in the middle of nowhere in a trailer, and she collected salt and pepper shakers.
That's the second one we've heard, the second story about salt and pepper shakers that we've heard this morning. How many did she have?
Oh, my God, Nick, she had hundreds, if not thousands. I mean, there were shelves and cans. And like I said, she lived in a trailer. It wasn't very large. I mean, they were just heavy. It was almost like you were afraid to move because you were going to knock something over.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there were just hundreds and thousands of all different kinds of kitschy, you know, salt and pepper shakers.
Yeah.
And I don't know how weird it is, but me personally, myself, I have a collection of police patches.
Police badges?
Patches.
Patches. Oh, yeah. Okay. No, that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been collecting. I'm 37. I've been collecting since high school. And I am a police officer, and I've got probably over 2,000 in my collection. Not just the United States, from all over the world.
I was going to ask you if you had them from all over the world. That's pretty cool. Do you have a favorite one? Mike, you have a favorite? I mean, besides Chicago, obviously.
There's a town called North Pole, Alaska.
Uh-huh.
They've got a pretty cool. The patch itself is shaped like the state of Alaska, and then it's got, like, you know, an actual pole and a sleigh. Santa Claus, Indiana is another one that's pretty clever, pretty creative. But
Yeah, I collect them. Like I said, I've been collecting for probably the better part of 20 years, long before I was a police officer.
Very cool. Very cool. All right, Mike. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, Nick.
All right, Dan, take care. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for collecting some unusual stuff. How about this? Victor Taylor has been potentially sitting on a gold mine for his incredibly detailed scratch lottery card collection. His particular interest in instant scratch cards produced by Camelot for the UK National Lottery. This guy's in London. Started with the 1995. He's got a ton of them, including the... These are from the UK. And so there was a Lord of the Rings scratch-off. and the ticket's it's three times longer than regular tickets. Hold on a minute. No, wait a minute. Hold it. Oh, man. Here's one. Italian Lorenzo Pessini owns a collection of 8,650 different bottled water labels from 185 countries and over 1,600 springs.
Color me impressed.
Wow. Over 8,600 different bottled water labels. Now, I think that this is probably more common. Here's a woman, Bettina Dorfman. She has a Barbie doll collection. I bet a lot of people have Barbie doll collections, but this is pretty impressive. She's got over 6,000 Barbies, and it's worth over $150,000.
Wow.
That's pretty impressive. And here's another one that I bet a lot of people have. But Robin Amato has a collection of over 3,000 Raggedy Ann dolls. Does she have Raggedy Andy? Yeah, she does. Raggedy Ann, Raggedy Andy.
Gotta have them both.
Yeah. How about a Winnie the Pooh collection? Deb Hoffman's Winnie the Pooh and Friends. So you got Igor and all the other Igor.
Yeah, Winnie the Pooh meets Frankenstein.
Eeyore is what I meant. Igor. Although that name would fit him.
Yeah.
Oh, boy, I'm Igor.
I've raised the dead yet again.
I've got a hunchback. Winnie the Pooh and his Friends collection consists of, wow, over 10,002 items. How can you be over 10,002 items? That would be more than 10,002, right?
I don't know.
Oh, brother. All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we've got a few more of these collections to talk about. Plus, something happened during the post-game show after the Hawks game last night that genuinely blew my mind. It involves an interview that happened after the Hawks game last night. We also have a Blackhawks Express to play, too. All right, let's take a break. The news is up after this.
That's God shall get. Them that's not shall lose. So the Bible says, and it's
welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here on 720 WGN here till 5 a.m. Triple Play Thursday. Yeah. And that is one artist, three songs, and we're wrapping it up with Blood, Sweat, and Tears. So there you go. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. And we're talking about collections, weird collections and weird collectibles. And then a little earlier, we were talking about sports memorabilia and the most expensive and what some of them are worth. But right now we're getting into stuff where I've got this article that I'm looking at right now. And if you want to see it, the full article with the pictures of the collectors is on our Facebook page. So you should check out another reason to like our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. Like us right now. And you can check out this article with all the pictures of the people and the weird stuff they collect. The pictures add a lot. So anyway, we got some texts coming in. 847 says, this is Sam who says, "Hey, Nick, I have a collection of car magazines like Hot Rod and similar magazines from the early 80s to now, literally thousands of magazines. I used to have a collection of Famous Monsters of Filmland magazine I had tons of Famous Monsters of Filmland. Legendary legendary magazine, Tom, you're too young to remember it, but have you ever heard of Famous Monsters?
Nope.
Famous Monsters of Filmland, Forrest Ackerman was the guy who created it. If you just do a Google search for Famous Monsters of Filmland, it is a legendary magazine that was all about monsters and horror movies and all kinds of stuff. Forry Ackerman, who was the publisher and the editor of the magazine, had one of the greatest horror collections of all time. I want to talk about somebody who was a collector. He had stuff from so many movies and props and all kinds of stuff. I mean, he lived in a museum. His house was this insanely packed museum filled with monster movie paraphernalia. And he would do tours of the house. He was a legend. He was like a horror movie legend. He appeared in a couple of movies, but mostly he was just a ridiculous fan. And that's what was the movie. That's what the book, the magazine was about. Paid tribute to horror movies and the classic Universal monster movies and stuff. And it was a legendary magazine, around for years.
Well, it looks like,
and the covers are amazing.
Yeah, the website's still going. They're still posting regularly.
Yeah,
magazine looks like it stopped regular print production like October 2018.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I know that it was still going. But it was. It was huge. It was just, I mean, if you were a horror movie fan, you know, of my age, when you were a kid, it was Famous Monsters of Filmland. I read it all the time, and I had I don't know what the hell happened to them, but I had a massive collection of those magazines, like stacks of them. Not strange, but large. I have 7 pinball machines, Carrie says, most from the golden age of pinball. Wow. 7 pinball machines.
I don't even know where you put those.
Dude, just open up an arcade. Dave from Lafayette, Indiana says, I collect Dave Brubeck albums. I currently have 178 different album titles on both vinyl and CD, as well as numerous 78 records, 45 singles, 8-track tapes, cassette tapes, and even 1 reel-to-reel. I was lucky enough to meet Mr. Brubeck on numerous occasions and even answered a few questions for him about what was currently available in his catalog. Needless to say, I'm a huge Brubeck fan. My Indiana license plate says Take 5, which is Brubeck's biggest hit song. All right, Dave, very cool. Billy Bill from Portage Park in Chicago. I collect old scissors. Okay, Jordan Peele. and old fishing lures. All right. Oh, by the way, I can't believe I haven't mentioned this yet. We lost a massive, massive fan of WGN and this show the other day. Peter from Decatur passed away. And if you're a regular listener to WGN, you know that he listened to this radio station religiously and faithfully and was a great contributor to this show. He would call in. He would text in all the time. Every single week, he was part of Straight Outta Context or Nick D Show Spies. He would also, you know, contribute dummy stories for You Big Dummy. He would come to my film club screenings. Peter in Decatur, a wonderful, wonderful guy, an amazingly faithful listener. And a great contributor to the show. He needed a liver transplant, and it didn't happen for him, and he passed away a couple of days ago. And it was not just a huge fan of this show and a great contributor and a sweet guy, but to the radio station in general. Everybody here at WGN knows who Peter in Decatur was, and I just wanted to acknowledge that he passed away, and we want him to rest in peace, and it's really sad, and we're gonna miss him big time. So Peter in Decatur, rest in peace, and we're going to miss you. So, okay. So here's some other things that people collect. Here's a guy, David Morgan. He has the largest collection of traffic cones. And they have the picture of him. He's outside, and he's surrounded by 137 different traffic cones. So I don't know if he just walks around taking them.
I mean, that's got to be it.
If they're like on the street for some purpose, and he just takes them. Okay, here's one. Here you go. Dutch collector Nick Vermeulen has 6,290 air sick bags. So he's got barf bags.
There it is.
But I bet he doesn't have a Mark of the Devil bag.
He could. It's $550 on eBay.
I'm seeing it, but I think maybe he specifically, because I think this is specific airline barf bags.
Right.
He has 6,290 air sick bags from over 1,191 different airlines in almost 200 countries. So I think he's very specific. But I bet he'd appreciate a Mark of the Devil barf bag. People who weren't listening yesterday are going, what? It's this movie that came out in the early 70s that was so notoriously violent called Mark of the Devil that you would pay your admission and they would give you a barf bag. And my dad bribed a manager at the McVickers Theater in downtown Chicago in the early 70s to get me in so I could see the movie and get a barf bag. And I did, and I saw it, and I had the barf bag. How about this one? Vic Klinko. Isn't that a game that they play on Price is Right?
Plinko.
Oh, it's Plinko. Right.
Klinko's his cousin.
Right. He owns a jaw-dropping collection of over 6,000 bottles of hot sauce.
Woo!
Included is, do you like the heat? Do you like the hot stuff?
It took time. I had to get used to it. I don't come from a very spicy family.
No, not Scotland?
It's mostly mashed potatoes.
Scotland and England?
Yeah. We conquered the world for spice and never used it.
By the way, last night on The Daily Show, Trevor Noah covered this story when he was doing headlines at the beginning of the show. He covered this story about there's something going on in Nigeria where the council is meeting and complaining about the fact that rich Nigerians are paying people to go fly to England and bring pizza back.
Not even good pizza.
That's what I'm saying. But the thing that Trevor Noah, who of course I love, is brilliant. He's so funny. He goes, let me get this straight. And he's laughing about it because they showed actual footage of a council meeting in Nigeria. And a guy just complaining, talking about how it's very annoying and really a waste of money for people to fly to England to bring pizza back to Nigeria. And so he shows a map and he goes, let me get this straight. You fly 2,000 miles past Italy to go to England to get pizza? What?
I've had a Domino's in the UK. It is depressing.
Oh,
it's the most depressing
thing. I can't even imagine. I had pizza when I was in Ireland. We just wanted to try it, and it was bad. I mean, obviously, you know, if you're from Chicago, you're from Chicago, you've got pretty high standards. And I'm not talking about deep dish. I'm not a deep dish guy at all. Mm-hmm. I'm a thin crust cut in squares as God intended. That's the pizza I like. The Chicago style tavern cut in squares,
yes,
thin
sir.
Crust. That's my favorite.
Yes, sir.
You ever tried John's Pizzeria on Western?
I have not.
You should go, man.
I'm a big fan of Dino's over on the Northwest side.
Where's that?
Oh, God. I can't even.
You're talking my neighborhood, man. Northwest side, you're talking Montrose?
Yeah, I know it's by my grandmother's house, which is by the Harlem Blue Line stop.
Oh, all right. So it's near the hip then.
Yeah, okay. Not far from the hip.
Okay.
Dino's Pizza. Grew up with that liter RC. Every large
exactly.
Pizza.
You get the RC.
God bless.
Of course, you get the RC. Well, but I'll tell you something. If you get a chance, you live in Rogers Park, right?
I used to.
Oh, you live in where?
I live in Uptown now.
Oh, you live in? Oh, that's right. I'm sorry about that. You live in Uptown. They won't. I don't know. I don't think they. No, they're not going to deliver to Uptown.
Are you going to say JB's?
I'm not. I'm going to say John's Pizzeria.
Okay, yeah, I've had John's. John's is great.
John's Pizzeria, which is at 2000 Northwestern.
Yeah.
Not very far from Margie's Candy. It is, for me, without question, the best thin crust pizza in the city. Without question. And every time I have a pizza from John's, my ex-wife, when we first met and we were dating, she lived in Bucktown, so we ordered from there all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And then there were times when we were in Albany Park where we would pay the extra to have it delivered outside of the zone because it's just the best pizza. It's really seriously the best thin crust pizza in the city. John's Pizzeria, 2000 Northwestern in Chicago. It is every single time I have it, I eat much, much more of the pizza than I would any other pizza. I just can't stop eating it. It's the best. It is the best thin crust pizza.
I will see.
Yeah,
because it's
phenomenal.
Good. When I went to school at Loyola, JB Alberta's.
Oh yeah, of course.
Because you got the giant.
Yeah. No, JB Alberto's, you know, we used to be, Factory Theater used to be in Rogers Park.
Yeah.
And whenever we would be building sets and stuff or being in the theater, we got the JB Alberto's. No surprise, no question about it. But, yeah. I grew up on Pete's Pizza on Western. Pete's Pizza on Western, right across the street from the Waveland Bowl.
The Waveland Bowl.
That's where we'd order from. I lived at like Addison and Ravenswood, so we would order from there all the time. That was the pizza. You're always partial to the pizza you grew up on, even if it's not as good as the pizza
Absolutely.
You like now.
Absolutely.
So Pete's was the pizza I grew up on. So, all right, we got to take a break. When we come back, we have a Blackhawks Express. Plus, after we play the Express, something pretty amazing happened on the post-game show with Chris Bowden last night. And I'm still freaking out about it. My mind is still blown about it. I still can't believe it happened. And we will play the audio of what happened during the post-game show featuring Chris Bowden and the great Doc Emmerich. So that's coming up after the Express, which is after this. Early morning temps today will hover around 40 degrees. It won't get much warmer than that. And upper 30s as cold by the lake shore. Rainfalls, we're going to get today about a half to three quarters of an inch. It'll be cloudy and chilly overnight. The weather improves tomorrow as morning clouds scatter. Highs near 60 degrees, lower near the lake. On Saturday, highs near 50. Showers will reach the area late at night. Winds increase to 20 to 30 miles per hour as a storm system approaches on Sunday. The temperatures rise to the highest level in nearly 6 months with highs in the mid-70s. It's currently 46 degrees at O'Hare. It's 47 at Midway and 44 at the lakefront. All right, I'll take a break. When we come back, the Express. Chicago!
Chicago Blackhawks have one last showdown with their rival from the Show-Me State, the St. Louis Blues, who after a coaching change have vaulted from last place in the league into a rock-solid playoff spot. As the Hawks now start to build for next season, they'll honor two Hall of Fame brothers who proudly wore the Blackhawks sweater back in the day. Now Phil Esposito skates over to the area between the benches, has something to say for the boys, and now he'll exit the ice. By the way, Phil and Tony, this is the first time that they've been teammates since the 1972 Summit Series where Team Canada took on the Soviet Union. We're underway here at the United Center. Blues control off the draw. Pareko from his blue line fires it through center ice. This deflects down in behind the Hawk net. Here's Taves carrying out of the Hawk zone to center ice. Passes on the right wing to Kane. He let it go down to the right circle. Taves now has it behind the Blues net. Taves around to the left circle to Kane. Right circle. He shoots on. A kick save made by Allen. Bertuzzo to Vince Dunn, Blues line, fed it ahead, Hawk line, picked off by Kajula to Taze, Blues line to Kane, over the line to the right circle, put it in front for Taze, he scores! And Patrick Kane has tied his career high on that goal, assisting on the captain's goal, the Hawks lead 1-0. Taze over the line along the left wing, boards back to Kane. Had it swept off his stick. Barbash had the other way to Sundquist into the Hawks zone. Shorthanded. Moves in and shoots. And Ward got a shoulder on that, knocking the puck over the net. To Kajula down toward the net. He lost the puck into the left wing corner. Got it back. Strokes it behind the net up the near side. Gustafson put a shoulder into Shen, but Tarasenko escapes with the puck over the Hawk line. Left circle. Shoots. He scores.
Well, you knew that was going to happen.
Behind the Hawk net, Perron takes the puck away, put it in front for Schwartz. He shoots in and out of the glove of Ward. Saad is the other way to center ice. To Cahoon over the Blues line, stopping near the right point. He cuts through the high slot, sends it to the net. They score! Artem Anisimov was doing a flyby in front of the Blues net, and I believe he tapped that down to the ice and passed Jake Allen. The Hawks take the lead 2-0, or 2-1, excuse me, with 6:40 left in period number two. Schwartz to the right corner, trying to center the puck and came back to him, and then Strome strips it away for the Hawks. Strome up the left wing to Kane, into the blue zone, down the slot with a backhand! He scores! Oh, no, they didn't go in and out of the net. Let's see, Kane is saying it did.
No,
light never came on.
I don't know if it did or didn't. They're going to stop. Talk about Patrick Kane delivering. I don't know if this is in or not. Let's get another look at it.
That's
oh, yeah,
it.
That's it.
Career high for Patrick Kane! Behind the net to O'Reilly, to Tarasenko along the left boards, out to Petrangelo, high slot to Perron, right circle with a toe drag and a shot, he scores! Power play goal, and the Blues get one back. They now trail 3-2 with 7:37 left in period number three. Put a pass up the left wing, Maroon, through center ice over the Hawk line, down the left wing, put it in front of the net, they score! Coming in from the backside for the Blues, I could not get a number. One of the Blues players went right to the crease and jammed it past Cam Ward. It was Tyler Bozak, and the Blues have tied this game at 3. Bouwmeester to center ice as the clock winds down and regulation is done. And the Blues have fought back to tie this game. 2 for 3 in shootout this season. Picks up the puck at center ice. Carries it over the Blues line down the right wing. Cuts back to the slot. Delays and shoots. He scores! Jonathan Toews with a hard wrist shot. Allen got a piece of it, but it deflected back into the Blues net. 1-0 Hawks. Tarasenko picks it up at center ice, crossing the Hawk line with speed to the slot. Deets and shoot. Oh, he couldn't get a shot away. Ward pump checked the puck away, and the Hawks win in the shootout. Final score of the shootout, the Hawks won, and the Blues no score. Final score of the hockey game, the Hawks 4, and the Blues 3.
All right. Well, they're out of the playoff race, but they did win, and it was nice that Patrick Kane got his career high. That was really nice. They play again tomorrow night at 7:30 against the Stars. By the way, did you hear how well represented the Blues fans were?
Yeah.
Man.
They're out there.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Okay. So following that game that we just heard the highlights of, Chris Bowden, as he always does a terrific job with your intermission reports, your pregame, and your postgame. And during the postgame last night, he interviewed the great, the one, the only Doc Emmerich, who is perhaps the finest voice in hockey, the best play-by-play guy in the NHL. He is the broadcaster on NBC. You hear him. He does the playoffs. He does the finals. He does the Stanley Cup. Everything. He is one of the most knowledgeable, one of the best hockey voices of all time. And Chris Bowden interviewed him last night. And this actually happened. And I'm still my head is still exploding. Listen to now. Oh, let me just preface this by saying I have never had Doc Emmerich on my show. I've never met him. I have been a fan of his, a massive fan of his for years and years and years. Like I said, finest voice in the NHL, the greatest play-by-play guy on TV. No question about it. It's a joy to listen to this guy talk about hockey and to do the play-by-play. But again, never met him. He's never been on my show. And Chris Bowden interviewed him after the game last night. And this is what happened.
Well, enjoy the ride without us again, unfortunately, this year. And always great visiting with you. Have fun.
Thank you. 50,000 watts, and that means I can get you day and night. And, of course, with the stream all the time. And from early in the morning until sometimes in the middle of the night. How does Nick come up with things to say at 2 o'clock in the morning? It's mystifying to me, but I love listening to all of you, and I thank you so much.
I mean, I don't even know what to say. I don't even know. I swear to you, I don't even know what to say. A friend of mine posted on my Facebook page that I got name-dropped by Doc Emmerich. And I was like, you're joking. That's a joke, right? And so then we pulled the audio, and then I heard that, and my head almost exploded. I was like, Doc Emmerich knows who I am? Doc Emmerich listens to my show? Doc Emmerich? My God. So I flipped out. I went a little nuts. You know, Dave is in the sports department right now. Dave, are you there? Can I get you to talk for a couple seconds?
I'm here.
Did you hear what I just played?
I did.
I don't even know what to say. I don't even know what to say.
Doc's the best.
He is unbelievable.
He is a WGN radio diehard. He listens all the time. He'll text during shows, he'll text during the Cochran show in the morning to one of us, or you know, he'll stop in sometimes when he's in town.
Yeah,
he's texted me during Northwestern games.
I had no idea. I swear to you, Dave, because he's a hero of mine. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, he's legend. He's a legend.
He's the best at what he does.
Absolutely,
and acknowledged by his peers also.
Yeah,
and that's very nice, Nick. You never know who's listening.
Exactly, and I started to freak out last night because I'm like, now there's too much pressure because Doc might be listening to the show. But that was stunning to me because he's like one of my heroes, and again, he could have name dropped anybody, but why did he choose me?
Well, see, I mean, don't be modest now. You deserve that. But he's also, above and beyond one of the nicest people in this business, and especially to achieve as much as he's achieved and be at the top of the profession,
yeah,
and to be as nice a guy as you'll find.
That's so it's so great, man. Cool. It was no, that was just a thrill for me. I know that's maybe
it, enjoy.
Some
no,
people might
should.
Think it's silly, but
no,
I
hear you,
man.
I hear you.
I just thought that was a great way to start my work night. I can tell you,
sure it was.
All right, Dave. Thanks, man.
All right, buddy.
Yeah, that was amazing. It really was. It was unbelievable. So Doc Emmerich name dropped me. I still can't believe it. Oh, that's so cool. All right. All right. So the news is coming up next, followed by the opening bell. And we'll be back tomorrow. All the regular Friday features, Fly Jams Friday, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, and You Big Dummy, all coming up. Plus, Herb Weisbaum is going to join us. He's our consumer guy who tries to help you out against the scams and gives you all the latest consumer stories. And we'll have that as well. That's all coming up right there on the Friday show tomorrow. The news is coming up right after we take a quick break here on 720 WGN.